show.
Head on with Bob Kincaid. 3 hours of conversation, cussing, and a discussing with America's only born and bred Southern liberal talk host. Head on with Bob Kincaid is brought to you each night by Coal River Mountain Watch. Coal River Mountain Watch invites you to become part of the solution, part of a sustainable future, part of the uprising against mountaintop renewable. Coal River Mountain Watch, CRMW.net. And now, from high in the hills of beautiful West Bicod, Virginia, here's Bob Kincaid on the Head On Radio Network.
Well, howdy! Merciful heavens, July is over. And thank you to everybody who helped us get past it. All day long today I've been thinking about the fact that I can't remember, like I said, I can't remember wanting to see a month end so badly as I wanted to see the end of the month of July 2012. Fresh start, fresh month, cross your fingers that August may be better. Oh, it'll probably be hotter. But maybe it'll be better. Welcome aboard. This is The Horn. HeadOnRadioNetwork.com. I'm Bob Kincaid. We do what we like to call what we do here conversation radio. And hopefully we will have a stirring round of it this evening. It's real easy to get The Horn in this modern and computerized age. No, we're not on much in the way of terrestrial radio unless there are pirate radio stations out there, and there are a couple of them, I know. Hi, guys. But we're available all over the internet. The easiest place to start is headonradionetwork.com. There's a listen live button there, and it's probably the simplest way to go about things. But there's also WhiteRoseSociety.org, the home of our podcast, by the way. Not to mention iTunes Radio and iTunes Podcasting, as well as Stitcher Internet Radio, Tuner Internet Radio, and TuneIn Radio, among a host of others. So any way you choose to listen is just fine, and you'll never get a bill. The Horn is supported by the kind and generous voluntary contributions of people who just think it's worth having. You'll like this. I love to share this kind of thing. Got a note a little bit ago, or well, this morning. It said from a technologically challenged listener. I don't believe a word of it. Bob, I'm an elderly Kentuckian hillbilly who is beginning to figure out this thing they call internet. I recently downloaded an application which allows me to choose and listen to some radio stations on my computer. That's where I found The Horn. I love it. I'm a liberal, completely surrounded by conservatives, and finally, I've found that there are non-conservative talk shows on the radio. My problem is, I'm apparently getting The Horn one day later than it was aired. Right now, Wednesday, August 1, I'm listening to you saying that this is Titanic Tuesday. Can you explain this to me and help me get you in real time? And I answered, this is, of course, real time, 6 p.m. to 9 p.m. Eastern Daylight Time, Monday through Friday, assuming that all the little packets pass and all the little electrons hold hands and the universe remains reasonably stable. We sit down for our little conversation 5 nights a week. And I hope we'll be hearing from Peg. It's about 4 minutes past the hour. Again, thanks very much to all of you who got us through July, and thanks to everybody who responded yesterday evening. Thank you for responding to Sal's challenge. We're done with July. We never stop having bills to pay, but thank God July has gone to wherever the candle flame goes when you blow it out. And that was very nice. We just got one in to get us started, on August. Thank you very, very much. It is the middle of the week, you know. It is Wednesday. Most folks view Wednesday as a sort of little push down the hill to get them toward Friday. Hump day, some have called it. But, you know, here on the Horn, we call it something entirely different. We call it Prayer Meeting Wednesday, brethren and sistren. It is Prayer Meeting Wednesday on the Horn. And as the plate passes, and you see those dollars laying in the plate, well, underneath it there's a PayPal button. Just hit it, and the next thing you know, you'll be helping keep everything on the air. With every head bowed and every eye closed, brethren and sistren, we'll bring the minister of music on for our offertory hymn. Brother, if you would, please.
Ladies and gentlemen, in the name of the Father, the Son, and the Holy Spirit, let me hear you say, Amen.
Amen.
Let me hear you say, Praise the Lord.
Praise the Lord.
Let me hear you say, I will empty the contents of my wallet into that little collection plate when it comes around.
I will empty the contents of my wallet into that little collection plate when it comes around.
And it's all tax-free. Hallelujah!
Hallelujah!
Praise the Lord for all the cash I've got. Praise Him for my Rolls Royce and my yacht. Serving God ain't hard with a credit card. Jesus died so I could make a lot. Praise the Lord, He's made us millionaires. Wave your donations in the air. We've replaced our hymns with ATMs, and soon we'll charge a fee on every prayer. Jesus Christ was a poor man, don't you know? He should have used our accountants for his cash flow. Stop the Sermon on the Mount, he should have had a bank account. 2,000 years with interest, he'd be rolling in the dough. Praise the Lord, this song's out on CD, just $40.95 plus GST. Hallelujah, plenty of moolah, solid gold baubles on my Christmas tree. I've got all of heaven's riches, thanks to all you stupid bitches. Praise the Lord for modern Christianity. Whoever said religion should be free?
Ooh, ee, ooh, ah, ting, tang, walla, walla, bing, bang. I love you. Hello and welcome, brethren and sistren. This is the Cathedral of Common Sense. It's Prayer Meeting Wednesday on the Horn. Now quit fiddling around out there in the parking lot smoking with the deacons and the sinners and come on through the vestibule, bypassing that 20-year-old bowl of buttermints, and come on down that blood-red carpet and fall on your knees. Fall on your knees at the altar, brethren and sistren, and lay your hands upon the subwoofer and feel the healing rays of common sense aflow going through you from the server on high, brethren and sistren, from the server on high. I am ultimate imam, arch rabbi, uber pope, animated animist, superior
grand poobah,
noble Turk, Bob Kincaid, and this is Prayer Meeting Wednesday on the Horn, brethren and sistren. And I want to extend a special welcome, as I mentioned a few minutes ago. You know, this is how it is in the Horn family, brethren and sistren. Glory, hallelujah, pass me a snake. I feel a rolling urge coming on me. No, I want to pass along a welcome and greeting. Dr. John just wrote in. I told you about our new liberal listener down there behind the cornbread curtain with the rest of us here. Behind the cornbread curtain in Kentucky. Dr. John's written in to Peg and says, a huge welcome. We're glad you found the family, and we'd love to hear you through your emails and your calls. We've never lost a caller yet, except, of course, when Brother Bob pushes the wrong button, and sometimes when Sister Agnes does, too. This is Prayer Meeting Wednesday on the Horn, and, of course, we have plenty to work with this evening on Prayer Meeting Wednesday, brethren and sistren. I mean plenty to work with. I scarcely know where to begin. Well, yes, I know where to begin. Of course I know where to begin. It's prayer meeting Wednesday. So naturally, shouldn't we begin with that paragon of prayer meeting? Absolutely. It's Pat Robertson.
You know, I was thinking as I was watching that story, you know, the Bible talks about in the later days that... Well, I was going to say that the truth becomes a lie and the lie becomes the truth. Yes. And that really is the essence of what we're dealing with right now.
Well, I wrote a book some years ago and I pointed out the time would come when a group that was on the fringes of society and, scorned by society as being out of the mainstream would suddenly turn on the mainstream and begin to make those who were traditionalists feel like they were unwelcome. And
that was probably back when he was selling his his muscle-building powder, his Sea of Galilee mud mask, and was mad at the hippies for not buying it. But never mind, he's going to recontextualize, Brother Pat is.
Exactly what's happened. I mean, the gays have just gotten the media microphone and the megaphone, and they're shouting. Who ever heard of this? A man says, okay, I believe in traditional marriage. All right, big deal. The next thing you know, these people are having sit-ins, having demonstrations, mayors are calling for people not to eat chicken because the head of the chicken...
Wait a minute. Did I miss something somewhere? Did a mayor actually come out and say, don't eat chicken? Because I don't remember that happening. I think maybe... I don't know. Maybe Pat overdosed on his medicine. And nobody said don't eat chicken. I think he's confusing gay folks with PETA. but no, the head. What about the head of the chicken? Okay, let's go back.
Chicken, because the head of the chicken company says I believe in a marriage between a man and a woman. How ridiculous can you get?
Yeah, that's true. How ridiculous can you get? In 2012, for some cranky old fundamentalist to be sitting out there saying, I believe marriage is between a man and a woman, just like it says in the Bible. Or actually, what it says in the Bible where it says it's between a man, several women, and as many camels and sheep and goats and oxen and beasts of the field as he can lay hands upon, or his woman's father will give her the dowry in the property exchange that we're going to call marriage. You know, what the Bible says.
It's America, ladies and gentlemen.
Darn right.
And this is 2000 and how many?
12.
Yeah, see, that wasn't rhetorical. Pat's having a little problems keeping up.
12.
We're going to be...
Yeah, 12? 12? 12?
13, Lord willing, soon. Crazy!
Is it going to get worse? I hope not.
Yeah. Is it going to get worse? I mean, what's going to... What's going to be worse than the gays are getting married and they've come for our chicken? You know, he is a minister of the gospel. That means he is genetically capable of smelling somebody else's fried chicken from at least 50 miles away. How can you not start prayer meeting Wednesday with Pat Robertson? The gay people, what year is it? 12? 12. The gay people are making people feel unwelcome. That's what they are, unwelcome. Brother Ron and Raleigh writing in. The gay? Bob, Pat must be talking about big gay. Thank you, that's super, says Ron and Raleigh. Big gay. Big bad gay. No, no singing tonight. No singing. Stop it, Bob. Stop it. Dr. John, meanwhile, noting that Pat Robertson's missing a golden opportunity here. He ought to be flogging his branded protein shakes and powders as a chicken replacement. But there are principles out there that are worth standing up for. And eating homophobic chicken sandwiches with them two miserable, sorry little slices of pickle on it and not so much as a smidgen of mustard, mayonnaise, nor ketchup, that's worth fighting for, because this, as Pat Robertson notes, this is America. Amen and amen. This is America, brethren and sisters, and it's prayer meeting Wednesday on the horn, 15 minutes past the hour. This is an America where we have freedom of speech, guaranteed under the First Amendment of the Constitution. Well, granted, the First Amendment of the Constitution is little more than a life support system for the religion industry anymore, but we'll pretend to make a show of the First Amendment actually counting for something. What do I mean, life support system for the religion industry? Well, how about Kevin Swanson? Kevin Swanson. He's a Christian pastor. And he was waxing philosophic. He waxes philosophic when he's not waxing other things. He was waxing philosophic on his radio program, because you know the right wing figured it out early on, just like the rest of the religion industry and the oil industry and all the other filthy right wing industries. They figured out early on that they needed to have a media presence out there, and man, they fund it. This particular show is called Generations Radio. Generating what? I haven't quite sorted out. I think it may be the very same thing that your average bovine generates on any given day after working things through its three or four or five stomachs, or however many a cow has. Damn, what kind of hillbilly am I not to know how many stomachs a cow has? Kevin Swanson, who shares a last name with a rather famous TV dinner company, Kevin Swanson is right head up at the Muppets. Yeah, there's this thing that happens to right-wingers every now and then when they I don't know, maybe their faith ebbs or wanes just a teensy bit. And they, by the way, yeah, Chick-fil-A's market share is down some 41%. After they declared that they didn't want no homos eating their chicken sandwiches. But it's got the right wing all head up, and especially the business with the Muppets. I mean, when Miss Piggy and Kermit hit turn on you, well, you know what? The right wing religion industry will turn right back. There ain't no other cheeks to be turned to no green damn frogs and talking puppet pigs. No, sir, you got to be tough with this lot, or they'll run right over you.
A Christian perspective ultimately brought the death penalty upon homosexuality between roughly 350 A.D. and roughly 1850 or so. So for about 1,500 years, that form of life had pretty much been eliminated, except here and there. It was in the closet, but it was almost unheard of for over 1,000 years, until recently. Of course, now you have a massive...
Yeah, mostly unheard of, except for your occasional dozens of Renaissance painters, your occasional pope, head of state, ordinary human beings. It was unheard of, because they were back in that closet where they belong, don't you understand?
The massive increase of this kind of thing. I'd say this is a really bad idea for somebody to stand up against the laws of God. And Dave, you realize that this is a brave venture. I mean, this has been about a 30-year plan, 40-year plan maybe, to completely consume America with a pro-homosexual agenda. And
consume America! Just like America has stopped consuming the glorious golden batter fried chicken sandwich of the Lord. Hallelujah.
Dave, I just don't think it's going to last. I think you're going to see Jesus Christ coming up against this kind of thing. And as we have said already.
Oh, Dr. Freud. Yeah? Did you catch that one, Doc? Bob, place that back for me again. I don't think I heard what I think I heard.
Completely consume America with a pro-homosexual agenda. And, Dave, I just don't think it's going to last. I think you're going to see Jesus Christ coming up against this kind of thing.
Did you get it that time, Doc? Oh, my, oh, my, oh, my. They could probably put him into therapy and perhaps put several therapists' children through dental school working out the issues that this one had. He really said that, did he, Bob? Oh, yeah, he did, Doc. He said Jesus Christ is going to come up against this bunch. Oh, I had no idea when I came up with that Freudian slip thing that it was going to become so popular. Oh, it is, Doc. What do you suppose? I don't know. I would suggest maybe perhaps a sawzine dot in the neck. Isn't that a chemical restraint? Wouldn't you restrain him? Point taken. What's Jesus going to do again?
A brave venture. I mean, this has been about a 30-year plan, 40-year plan maybe, to completely consume America with a pro-homosexual agenda. And, Dave, I just don't think it's going to last. I think you're going to see Jesus Christ coming up against this kind of thing. And as we have said already about the Joe Paterno...
Jesus is coming. Quick, hand him a tissue.
Paterno case.
Well, it's pretty obvious to anyone who's...
What? Wait, stop, huh? I mean, I can cope with the occasional non sequitur. This ain't my first verbal rodeo. But did I just hear what I thought I just did? I don't think the doc can even help with this one.
So I think you're going to see Jesus Christ coming up against this kind of thing, and as we have said already about the Joe Paterno case.
The Joe Paterno case? And I'm just absolutely positive we're not going to get any expansion on that. Jesus Christ is going to come right up against it, come right all over. What did he say? Just like in the Joe Paterno case. Did I miss something? Has the religion industry declared that Joe Paterno's the Antichrist or something? God. Sometimes it's hard to follow without psychedelics and psychotropics. It just is.
Well, it's pretty obvious to anyone who's onlooking that tolerance only...
Onlooking? Paying attention? Watching? What? I'm sorry, I got to let these goons talk.
This kind of thing, and as we have said already about the Joe Paterno case.
Well, it's pretty obvious to anyone who's onlooking that... Tolerance only runs one direction.
Yeah.
You only can tolerate gays. You can't tolerate those who don't support gays.
What? No. No, don't support gays? What does that mean? That there are some of us out there who are writing checks to gay folk? Do you get a check now for being gay? Supporting people who are gay? Huh? See, this is how these... filthy religion industrialists miscast and mischaracterize the nature of the discussion and the debate in this country. Intolerance? I'm not intolerant of them. But it seems that in this country we do have the right to call out bigotry where we see it. To call out prejudice where we see it. And these people... are up to their necks in bigotry and prejudice and homophobia, aren't they? Support what?
I'm looking that tolerance only runs one direction.
Yeah.
You only can tolerate gays. You can't tolerate those who don't support gays.
So am I to understand from listening to these clowns... Do I have to play the music again? That I'm supposed to be tolerant of, say, for instance, the thugs, the homophobic, bigoted, prejudiced thugs who crucified Matthew Shepard? Have I got that right? And that there's something wrong with me for not saying, well, this shit happens. Because I don't think there's anything wrong with not tolerating people who hate people for who and how they love. Because I'm not much, you know, I don't watch porn either. Any kind of it. Because I'm not that much interested beyond whatever I'm up to and my beloved spouse. I ain't go further than that. I don't much care what goes on when the lights go off. Or even if you leave them back on. Or swing from the light fixture. Don't care, don't want to know, don't want to watch. These people baffle me.
And Kermit the Frog's not eating.
What? All right, I don't want to be accused of taking some malicious right-winger out of context. Let me see if I can shut up for a minute.
Tolerance only runs one direction.
Yeah.
You only can tolerate gays. You can't tolerate those who don't support gays.
And Kermit the Frog's not eating Chick-fil-A either.
No, no, they're pulling out that.
Yeah.
Doc. Yeah? They're pulling out. Really? I somehow doubt it. Kermit the Frog isn't eating Chick-fil-A. Was there ever anything to suggest that Kermit the Frog ate anything but flies? He's a frog! Okay, wait a minute. Before I get sucked into the same trap here, he's a puppet! Doesn't mean anything. He's made of, like, carpet-covered foam rubber. But just like their zombie, Kermit's real! Done seen him on the TV! Even rode a bicycle in one of them movies! And if a frog can ride a bicycle, by God, that's a real frog.
Chick-fil-A used to have
Muppet
like a
thing.
Have an association with Muppets, Happy Meals, yeah, kind of thing. But Kermit the Frog didn't want to be there anymore. Mm-hmm. Turns out that Kermit would not that interested in Miss Piggy. Another frog.
Maybe Dan Cathy should consider doing a frog fillet for one of the sandwiches.
A frog fillet?
A frog fillet, yeah.
Just
in commemoration of Kermit the Frog pulling out.
Now
to his support for...
You see how these... Aren't they cute? Aren't they just delightful, these loving followers of the Prince of Peace? Did you hear what he said to begin with? There was a time when a Christian perspective ultimately brought the death penalty upon homosexuality. And this goober has just suggested that frogs need to be killed by Dan Cathy because a multi-million dollar corporation just doesn't want to do business with Chick-fil-A anymore. Do these people scare you as much as they do me? I can't. You're worse than I am. You really are. But Jesus is not coming. Oh, sure, he's breathing hard. Father Joe Paternicus was molested by the Hoor of Babylon. If Jesus saved gays, did he win valuable prizes? Pulling out, isn't that Kermit Interruptus? Mm-hmm. And this, too. Wasn't King James a subscriber to the Elmo sexual agenda? Y'all just awful. Oh, there's our answer. Thank you, Dr. John. Generations Radio, generating fodder for prayer meeting Wednesday on the Horn, of course. Patois Robertson obviously doesn't get with the Latin. Corpus Paulo is not chicken head. Guess that boy must not subscribe to the Elmo sexual agenda. These are all from Irish Dave. P.S. Maybe this explains why he failed the bar exam even though he was a grad of the UVA law school. Oh! Kermit interrupt us. Irish Dave, honestly. Okay, I had to mute the microphone when I first saw Kermit interrupt us. But hiding behind all the lunacy is the homicidal spirit that hides not so very well inside the body of fundamentalist right-wing religion industry. I don't even know what to call it anymore. They call themselves Christians, and I can't find any Christians who won't say they aren't, or rather, who will say they aren't. Getting all hung up amongst my negatives. Have you seen any members of the Christian faith who straight up say that people like this Swanson or Robertson or any of the other goons that we deal with on a regular basis on prayer meeting Wednesday, have you seen any mainstream Christian, so-called mainstream Christian minister, religion, faith, anything, say that these vipers, these serpents in suits, are not followers, are not washed in the blood, will not enter the kingdom of heaven? Have you heard any of them declare that? Because I haven't. I haven't. If you lie down with dogs, you get up with fleas, right? But Pastor Swanson ain't done. Oh, no. No, when last we heard from Pastor Swanson, he was calling down a fatwa on real amphibians, not puppet ones.
Miss Piggy, maybe interested in another frog.
Maybe Dan Cathy should consider doing a frog fillet for one of the sandwiches.
A frog fillet?
A frog fillet, yeah.
Just
commemoration of Kermit the Frog pulling out of his support for Chick-fil-A. And Dave, you know that Sesame Street and the Muppets are probably going to take the sodomy route. And I don't know, do they support NAMBLA? I'm not sure. We should ask...
God! Stop it, Bob. Animal noises are not good radio. You know Sesame Street is going to take the sodomy route. Are they associated with NAMBLA? My head hurts. But these Bible-toting thugs cannot resist equating two peaceful, law-abiding human beings of the same gender who happen to want to love and marry each other with, say, Jerry Sandusky, a man who really did man-on-little-boy sex. And I despise them for it. I despise them for it. I don't even think I need to be forgiven for despising them for it. Didn't Yeshua, the brown-skinned Palestinian day laborer, didn't he say, "Get thee behind me, Satan"? Just checking.
Ask. We should ask if the Muppets support NAMBLA.
Maybe we should. I don't think the frog fillet will sell. This is just me, just a little marketing device. I think Miss Piggy on a bun, that's a winner.
Miss Piggy on a bun. That sounds good. Kind of fried pig on a bun kind of thing.
Yeah, it's sausage, you know.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
A little bacon.
Okay. Piggy on a bun. All right, well, folks, it's good news that we've got.
Yeah, it's good news. The good news of Jesus Christ, and there it is. Well, I'm glad to know that I'm not the only one that stops and screeches and makes animal noises at things like NAMBLA. Dr. John, wait. The Muppets are going to take the sodomy route? What in holy hell? I guess deep down I always knew Grover was a top. Oh, damn, where's the bottle? Yeah. Well, Lottie over in the chat room's having a fine time. Rolling on floor laughing my ass off. Bob, we have us a bucket of Southern Fried Christian tonight. So few lions, so many fundies. Bill in Cleveland noting, Pat Robertson sure could guard that officer's booze in 1950. Yeah, and the allegation in there, Isaac caught it, that Kermit's gay? Irish Dave noting, but Sandusky did that in the shower, so isn't cleanliness next to it? No, obviously, Jerry Sandusky has been reading Obviously, Jerry Sandusky has been reading the books authored by Dr. James Dobson. You know, he's a real live Ed D. doctor in child psychology. No, I'm not kidding. You know, that book that Dr. Dobson wrote where he said that men should take little boys into the shower and shake their penises at them so as to keep them from getting all gayed up and everything. Ron and Raleigh. Tolerate? Hey, Bob, I've been tolerating right-wingers, bigots, and all manner of intolerant swine my whole life. Now, if I was intolerant, I'd be wailing away at these a-holes with a Louisville slugger every chance I got. These jackasses have no idea how tolerant liberal people are when dealing with their ilk. There. Yeah. See? But at least there's a remedy to some of this lunacy. Chick-fil-A really is having the devil's own time. I offer you, it happened two nights running over on Conan O'Brien's show. Yeah, maybe you've seen this, maybe you haven't. But recognizing that they no longer had the Muppets, Conan O'Brien introduced the new puppet mascot, of Chick-fil-A, Chaz. Dear God, it's almost too much to contemplate. Chaz, the intolerant Chick-fil-A chicken. So, strap in. But God, this is good. Conan O'Brien.
This week, the Jim Henson Company said they would no longer allow its puppets to promote the fast food company Chick-fil-A after the founder of Chick-fil-A came out against homosexuality. Yeah, so. Yeah. But this has not stopped Chick-fil-A. They just came out with a new puppet to spread the word about their delicious chicken sandwiches and homophobia. Please welcome Chaz the Intolerant Chick-fil-A Chicken.
Oh. Hi there. Hi there, everybody. Don't forget. There's only one great chicken sandwich, and only one way to love.
Okay, I'm sorry, Chaz, that sounds a little intolerant.
It's in Scripture. The only pickle a guy should put in his mouth is our Chick-fil-A classic. Yum! Right,
you made your point, we get it. Thank
Ladies,
you.
If you want to toss a salad, make it our Southwestern char grilled salad with garlic and buttered croutons.
Yeah, fine. Thank you, Chaz. Please.
Hey, dudes, if you want warm nuts all over your face, there's only one choice, our Chick-fil-A hot fudge sundae. Okay.
Stop. Stop right now.
Hey, if you want hot meat stuck between two buns, covered in sauce, the way God meant it to be enjoyed, it's Chick-fil-A or the flames of hell.
All right, Chaz.
I'm still laughing. Or the flames of hell. You know, they often say that life imitates art. It's 2012. How many years ago was it that, before Lindsay Lohan had all of her problems, how many years ago was it that that movie Mean Girls was out? And at the time, it was like a bit of, it was kind of a reflection of reality, but there was a whole lot of parody in it, too. You know, like this.
And on the third day, God created the Remington Bull Action Rifle so that man could fight the dinosaurs and the homosexuals.
Amen.
Yeah, wasn't that cute back then? But now we've got ostensibly ordained ministers of the saving power of Christ Jesus suggesting that frogs should be slaughtered as an act of protest and served up to good Christians who go to Chick-fil-A. Every now and then Agnes will look at me and say, you know what we got to do, Bob? No, what, honey? We got to go back and get on that lib boat again. Because I think we went through the Bermuda Triangle and we came back to the weird universe. I don't know. I think it's just weird. Michael writing in, periodically showing up in the chat room. You'll know him as Kid A. Bob, first let me say I loathe the concept of tolerance. But I guess if you can't respect people who may be superficially different than you, whether it be by ethnicity, skin color, invisible sky friend preference, or sexual preference, if you can't respect and love folk for who they are and tolerance is the best you can manage, well, okay, says Michael, I get it. Putting that aside, however, are these right-wing religio freaks saying that their intolerance of to gays should be tolerated? If so, and that is exactly what they're saying, in fact, they're saying that for us to criticize them is somehow religious persecution, because remember, fundamentalist religion industry, pseudo-Christians, phony Christians, fake Christians, baloney Christians, whatever you want to call them, have a persecution complex. If a waiter brings them a cold cup of coffee, they feel persecuted. So, yeah, that's what they mean. Michael asks, if so, how hypocritical and illogical is that? It's a lot hypocritical. It's harder to contemplate than the notion that multiplying negatives yields a positive. Because, says Michael, if their intolerance ought to be tolerated, then instead of bitching and moaning about how normal people don't tolerate their intolerance, shouldn't they just be politely tolerating our intolerance toward their intolerance? Or are we supposed to tolerate their intolerance toward our intolerance toward their intolerance? Michael adds, P.S., oh God, the NAMBLA straw man. I give up. F these people. They are so fascinated with NAMBLA. I sometimes think that NAMBLA was created just to make them freak the F out. And by the way, Michael's analysis, which is, makes as much sense as anything coming from him, you know, the part where shouldn't they just be politely tolerating our intolerance toward their intolerance, or are we supposed to tolerate their intolerance toward our intolerance toward their intolerance? Michael titles the Mobius strip of intolerance. Isaac, Chick-fil-A getting effed by Wienerschnitzel. Okay, that's yeah, that's a visual, and visuals on the radio are like dancing about architecture. But that was a damn good one. you kind of gotta laugh, because it's really all you got. But at the bottom line, Zach Ford over at Think Progress really has the best analysis on of the situation. This is, by the way, Chick-fil-A Appreciation Day. Did you know that? 8-1. Get it? 8-1. Yeah, he kind of ripped that off from Van Halen, OU 8-1-2. 8-1. Zach Ford says, perhaps Mike Huckabee's scheduling of his Appreciation Day is to blame, but there is a valid reason why Chick-fil-A has continued to occupy a prominent space in the news cycle. But despite what many detractors are now trying to claim, Zach Ford continues, it has nothing to do with chicken. The Washington Post's Alexandra Petri's mantra, judge the sandwich by the sandwich. Oh, for crying out. Okay, here, let's judge the sandwich by the sandwich. It's a really cheap bun with a breast of chicken in it and a couple of ribeye slices of pickle, and the chicken tastes as good as it does because their coating mixture includes a healthy dose of powdered sugar. And powdered sugar is, of course, ground microfine sugar that's been ground microfine and had cornstarch added to it. That's why you can't use powdered sugar in something like, say, a mojito. The things we learn... The Washington Post's Alexandra Petri's mantra, judge the sandwich by the sandwich, exemplifies this emerging attitude that the Chick-fil-A story is irrelevant. Petri, herself a supporter of marriage equality... How about just marriage? Thinks that the whole situation is a waste of time. She says, if you want a world where your restaurateurs have to agree with you, you're going to be missing out on a lot of excellent sandwiches, and that's not a world I'd like to live in. But Zach Ford makes a very trenchant point. He says that it's not about chicken sandwiches. This is about this so-called controversy, the Chick-fil-A, I don't know, non-troversy. Now, it is a controversy because this is corporate. This is an incredibly wealthy portion of corporate America stepping out of the world of business and into the realm of social debate. And so they kind of earned it. Zach Ford says there's a very obvious reason why all of the conservatives defending Chick-fil-A only talk about it as defending traditional marriage. Ignoring President Dan Cathy's vitriolic comments and the company's odious donations, they want to minimize the validity for outrage and reduce the issue to one of mere First Amendment privilege. Conceding to that spin allows the true harm of funding ex-gay ministries and anti-gay hate groups to go unchecked. Whoa. Chick-fil-A and its president, Dan Cathy, are nothing short of religious bullies. And attacking the LGBT community for standing up for themselves is an expression of either ignorance in regards to Chick-fil-A's offenses, apathy for LGBT equality, laziness, or a combination of all three. God almighty. And we're not even good and started. Before I close out this evening's prayer meeting filibobster, brethren and sisters, we have a postscript. One of the most Christian men in the Congress of the United States, in the House of Representatives, is, of course, Iowa's 5th District Representative Steve King. Last night we had audio of Representative King waxing philosophic on the need for America to keep the incredibly cruel practice of dogfighting legal. Now this clip is 1 minute and 35 seconds long. I'm going to tell you now, it's going to feel like forever. To have this much ignorance, this much hate, this much distortion, this much perfidy, this much dissembling, this much mendacity crammed into a minute and 35 seconds, I don't think it can happen within the worlds of either Newtonian or Einsteinian physics. Time is going to slow down for you when you hear this. And it'll slow down for me, too. And by the time this is over, I'm going to have 52 emails begging me to make it stop, even though it's almost impossible for you to craft and for me to get 52 emails in the space of time that it takes to run this clip. Because Representative Steve King, and remember, this is, I always like to remind folks, this is the guy who said everything would be so much better in America if the homos would just quit acting so gay and go back to the good old days of the 1950s when they lived in the closet or got murdered for it. Saving grace of the principies. He has caught a lot of hell. No, not hell. He only thinks it's hell. He has caught a great deal of criticism over his dogfighting comments. He is also not a very bright man and has never learned the first law of holes. When you're in one, stop digging. And he tried to explain himself. Clarification. He says that his words were distorted. Now, they may have been. It was not the best quality audio, but no, that's the only kind of distortion that went on because we played the whole clip. I played, me and that mouse in my pocket, I played the whole clip here last night. But he wants, and I owe it to him. This man's out there writing shows for me. I do owe it to him. So he wants to make sure that you get all clarified about what he meant, about what it means when he says that America needs dogfighting. Okay? Strap in. I wouldn't be in a chair with rollers on it if I were you, because you may wind out there somewhere past the planet Norblop 12 if time slows down as much as I think it will. Get slingshotted around the sun, and the next thing you know, some green woman's asking you, what is this thing kissing? And, well, you know what happens from there. Probably be a fundamentalist standing next to you trying to tell you about the God never sanctioned interplanetary. You know how they are. So this here is Steve King, member of the House of Representatives. Walking, talking proof that a functioning human brain is not a requirement for office in the House of Representatives, and damn sure not a membership requirement for the Republican Party. Representative Steve King.
There has been a real effort to distort this out across the websites. And what I've said is that we need to respect humans as more than we do animals. Whenever we start elevating animals up to above that of humans, we've crossed a moral line.
Got it so far? We need to respect humans more than we do animals. This isn't a respect issue, is it? Isn't this a basic issue of not being cruel for the sake of cruelty? Isn't that what this is? How is it that choosing not to be gratuitously sick and cruel to animals that his philosophy says are dumb animals? I mean, how does this guy feel about bestiality? I don't know. If you ask Steve King about bestiality, he'll probably tell you bestiality means never having to say you're sorry. But this is where it begins, and it does not get any better. Sorry about the audio.
There has been a real effort to distort this out across the websites. And what I've said is that we need to respect humans as more than we do animals. Whenever we start elevating animals up to above that of humans, we've crossed a moral line.
By the way, I got to tell you, the video of this was shot with him sitting in front of a couple of statues of eagles with a sign behind him that says, live free or die. Just setting the scene, okay? That's just the setup.
For example, if there is a sexual predator out there who has impregnated a young girl, say a 13-year-old girl, and it happens in America more times than you and I would like to think, that sexual predator...
But wait! If that sexual predator has impregnated that 13-year-old girl, in the weird, twisted, sick, psychotic, sociopathic universe inhabited by Representative Steve King, that 13-year-old girl does not have a right not to carry her rapist's baby to term, as you'll see. So, remember, he set up this hypothetical where a sexual predator has raped and impregnated a 13-year-old girl, right? Well, he's not upset about that part. Wait till you hear what he's upset about.
Predator could pick that girl up off the playground at the middle school, a young girl, say a 13-year-old girl, and it happens in America more times than you and I would like to think. That sexual predator could pick that girl up off the playground at the middle school and haul her across the state line and force her to get an abortion to eradicate the evidence of his crime and bring her back and drop her off at the swing set, and that's not against the law in the United States of America.
Again, I tell you, I played this clip several times before the program to make sure that I could get through it. And I'm obviously failing. A sexual predator could pick up a 13-year-old girl off a playground and take her across state lines, Mann Act, to an abortion doctor who would eliminate the evidence of his crime, you know, the pregnancy, and then take her back and drop her at the swing set. Now, apparently, this hypothetical little 13-year-old girl is Helen Keller before Annie Sullivan got to her, because she can't tell anybody that she's just been picked up, carried across the state line to an abortion provider, who, and the abortion provider is apparently... Renfield or something, because he in turn can't, and there won't be any evidence. There won't be any evidence. And as you heard Representative Steve King say, well, that's perfectly legal in the United States. This is a member of the House of Representatives of the United States Congress who thinks that rape is legal in the United States, because you heard him say it, and none of that is illegal. Screaming yet? I told you time would slow down. This clip is a minute and 35 seconds long, and we ain't but 45 seconds into it. It is not okay, and you're not all right, and I'm not all right, because apparently... Really? We live in the same universe with this yo-yo? And it happens all the time in America. Really, all the time in America, sexual predators pick up 13-year-old girls off of swing sets, take them across, rape them, get them pregnant, take them across state lines for abortions, and... I think we all have enough understanding of the way pregnancy works to understand that he's going to have the 13-year-old, it's not just, he's going to have to drive her for like 6 weeks or something before there's anything to abort. Or before she knows there's anything to abort, or he knows there's anything to abort. Because otherwise, his stupid little hypothetical would be that he picks her up takes her across state lines and buys her a morning after pill or a playground after pill or... I swear to Jesus, one of these nights I am not going to have any control over it. One of these asshats is going to make me speak in tongues. I kid you not. Again, 45 seconds gone. 45 to go.
I have told Wayne Pacelli and the people who believe that we should focus all of our efforts on the, on anything that they can bring that that limits activity around animals, that we need to respect and revere human life first, animal life second. That is my stand. It is a moral stand. And it's certainly...
Moral stand. We need to respect human life first, animal life second. Does this include, I'm just asking, does this include stuff like mad cow? Downer cattle? Does this include diseases that are mutated in the disgusting seas of feces and urine and slime and drugs and waste of, say, you know, the pork industry? Because see, we don't have U.S. you know, that little purple stamp on it, on that big hunk of it's USDA inspected. Of course, you don't see it that much anymore because we don't have that many USDA inspectors. Government regulation gonna bring down our freedoms. Live free or die. I guess this clown thinks. There's that word again. I guess Representative King thinks that we have USDA inspections for the sake of the animals. When in fact, some of these cruelty efforts, anti-cruelty efforts, have a lot to do with the well-being of people who consume animal flesh so that they don't get sick. But Steve King hates that too, because again, that's government regulating and interfering with the proper forces of the free market as understood by Jesus and Thomas Jefferson and how they done wrote the Constitution together. Good God, there's still 30 seconds left of this. Don't unstrap.
We need to respect and revere human life first, animal life second. That is my stand. It is a moral stand, and it's certainly not a stand in favor of animal fighting, and there is no record that would say that either. Now, I have broken up some dog fights being around the dogs that we have, and I've got a few little marks on me that come from that, but they do jump in, and they do get into a tussle with each other once in a while, and you have to jump in there and break it up. So, no, I haven't started any dog fights. I've ended a number of them that just happened spontaneously. But we love our dogs. They're great bird dogs. They're all pointing labs. And I don't know that I'd go to the field if I didn't have a dog to take with me. So,
okay, well, it's all cleared up now. Doesn't he sound so tough, so macho, so butch? I ain't started no dog fights, but I've sure ended a few. Sounds like something you hear at the beer joint on Saturday night at about 12:30. Now listen here, pilgrim. I'm not starting this fight, but I'm not afraid to end it. God Almighty. Yeah, see, Robert gets it. Bob, kidnapping isn't illegal? Crossing state lines? Even I know that's a crime. And see, there it is. Michael, regarding Representative King. Stop! Yeah. This is... this is the unbelievably weird, incredibly unintelligent world of the right wing. This passes for intelligent discourse. Representative Steve King had an opportunity to say, you know, wait, let's not send this out. But because he operates only with the amygdala, and a really big amygdala, you know, the lizard brain, there was nothing inside his skull to say, Steve, this is not going to do for you in the way of an explanation what you think. No, this is like Jerry Sandusky calling into ESPN and saying, but I love children. Clayton noting, my guide dog is brighter than this asshole. F him. Jesus, Irish Dave. Didn't Steve see how those dogs were dressed? He's probably asking for it, too. Also. Uh-oh. And, you know, we have our fun and everything. But we have to come back to that vital question. We have to come back to that vital question. What do you say about a country in which this passes for something approaching rational discourse? What's left? Can you fix what's broken in a country where this is not the loyal opposition, but the leadership of one body of the government? I mean, Steve King, he's got him some power there in the House of Representatives. He's part of the brain trust. Michelle Bachmann, 1L Michelle. Michelle Bachmann sits on the Intelligence Committee of the House. It's kind of hard not to think that we might be effed and there's a pretty good chance that Willard won't let us on his spaceship. I don't know. It is prayer meeting. I do know this. It is prayer meeting Wednesday on the Horn. I'm Bob Kincaid. Your calls are welcome. Agnes is no longer back here to answer the phones for you, more's the pity. But if you call in, you'll go on hold, and eventually, you'll be on the internet radio. The number's 877-443-2366, 877, the numeral 4, head on. Or, if you don't need the toll-free help, 304-658-3333. So jump right in, the conversation's fine. We'll be back. I'm Bob Kincaid.
Polynesia, I want you to teach me everything you know. What? 2,000 languages? Certainly. We'll start at 8 o'clock tomorrow morning.
But it took me over 100 years.
Then we'll start at 7 o'clock. There's not a moment to lose. Matthew, think what it would mean if I could talk to the animals. Just imagine it, chatting to a chimp in chimpanzee. Imagine talking to a tiger, chatting to a cheetah. Oh, what a neat achievement that would be. talk to the animals, learn their languages, maybe take an animal degree. I'd study elephant and eagle, buffalo and beagle, alligator, guinea pig and flea. I would converse in polar bear and python. And I would curse in fluent kangaroo. If people ask me, can you speak rhinoceros? I'd say, of course, yes. Can't you? I conferred with our furry friends, man to animal. Think of the amazing repartee. If I could walk with the animals, talk with the animals, grunt and squeak and squawk with the animals, and they could talk to me. If I consulted with quadrupeds, think what fun we'd have asking over crocodiles for tea. Or maybe lunch with two or three lions, walruses or sea lions. What a lovely place the world would be. If I spoke slang to orangutans, the advantages any fool on earth could plainly see. Discussing Eastern art and dramas with intellectual llamas, that's a big step forward, you agree? I'd learn to speak in antelope and turtle. My Pekingese would be extremely good. If I were asked to sing in hippopotamus, I'd say why notamus. And would. If I could parley with pachyderms, it's a fairy tale worthy of Hans Andersen or Grimm. A man who walks with the animals, talks with the animals, grunts and squeaks and talks with the animals. This is the most exciting thing that's ever happened to me, Polynesia. I can't wait to start. It's incredible. It's impossible. But it's true. A man can talk to the animals. It's a miracle. In a year from now, I guarantee, I'll be the marvel of the mammals. Playing chess with camels. No more just a boring old MD. I'll study every living creature's language so I can speak to all of them on sight. If friends say, can he talk in crab or pelican? You'll be right. And if you just stop to think of it, there's no doubt of it, I shall win a place in history. For I can walk with the animals, talk with the animals, grunt and squeak and squawk with the animals. And they can squeak and squawk and speak and talk to me.
Thinking ahead means preparing for the future of our children, our grandchildren, and our wild, wonderful West Virginia. Developing our renewable energy resources is the best way to ensure a clean, sustainable way of life and safe, good-paying jobs for generations to come. Here in the Mountain State, our most abundant energy resource is the wind. Our ridges and majestic mountain peaks shape and direct the wind like stones in a mountain stream. Coal River Mountain is the ideal place for developing wind power. The Coal River Mountain Wind Farm will provide us with a source of clean energy and good jobs forever. We have the power to make our future happen now. Be a part of the clean energy solution for West Virginia by visiting coalriverwind.org or call 304-854-2182. That's coalriverwind.org, 854-2182.
It's your second hour in the Liberal Sandbox, and you're head-on with Bob Kincaid.
I couldn't resist that. You can't exactly call what Rex Harrison did singing, but he, whatever it was, he did it awfully daggum well. I remember going to see that film as a little boy. It instilled a love for the animal world. As it did, I'm sure, for a lot of children. Not that much younger than Representative Steve King. Maybe he did. Maybe they didn't show it out at the moving picture house somewhere in the wilds of Iowa, wherever he grew up. Nah, truth of the matter is, understand this for what it was. That's code talking. As I noted last night, that business about revering humans more than animals, that's straight up dominionism. But the other side of it is it's also code talk for his primary shareholders, the political contributors, the meat industry. He wants them to understand that he will brook no consideration of any law that might suggest that an animal ought to be treated with some degree of dignity before it is slaughtered and sent to our meat cases around the home of the brave and the land of the free. Because that would be an unfair regulation of government. By government. Of the meat industry. And when you go to... every regulation is an infringement upon freedom. Including the freedom of Americans who eat tainted meat to die in horrible illness and pain. Freedom. That is what the Republican Party is all about. Yeah, I think Representative Steve King kind of got under Ray's skin. No effing way. Talk about oxymorons. This is their world. This is their normal. Ron and Raleigh, hey Bob, I thought necrophilia meant never having to say you're sorry. P.S. The Mann Act made it a crime to transport a woman across state lines for immoral purposes. I don't think that covers abortion. I don't think it does either, come to think of it. I was just thinking about transporting underage females across state lines. No. Swing sets and abortion are legal in this country. Rape and kidnapping are not. But it's perfectly legal. How can he consume enough alcohol to say that, well, maybe it's drugs? You know, you don't slur your speech when you're on acid or anything. No, I've never known anybody to take acid and be that mean. I don't know. Maybe it's horse tranquilizer. Why yes, Irish Dave. Rex Harrison was a well-known thespian. Jesus. Well, let's go to the phones. You know the number, 877-443-2366. A couple of lights not blinking, so jump on in. Hey, welcome to the program.
It's prayer meeting Wednesday on the horn.
It is, David from Maine, it is.
It can only be crazy time today.
Well, there's no way around it. This is just
the highest level of crazy during the week, I would say.
Well, it's like a piece of music that builds to a crescendo. You know, we start with Moran Monday, we work up through Titanic Tuesday, and then just with crashing cymbals and banging timpani, boom, there it is.
It's the Ligeti piece, the 2001.
Yes.
Of the racing voice.
Boom, 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 boom.
And then the racing voices come in. The dissonance just surrounds you, and then suddenly you're going mad. I was wondering if you got the video that I sent you. That's just to torture you.
Yeah, I did, and it did.
Okay.
You're not all right. You know that, right?
Did you see the bloopers at all?
No.
Oh my God! The bloopers is at the end of it. For anyone who hasn't seen it, it's a conservative kid who answers why Obama is bad for America, and it's so obvious that he's coached. It's beyond the word coached.
Well, I think we can't just taunt people with this, David.
You just can't.
Shall we?
I think I know what one got you, Bob.
Shall we?
Yeah.
You wanna? Hang on. All right, here we go. Oh, sorry. Ad first.
Yeah.
I hate those damn things. You know, my dad used to say during commercials, I'll be so glad when we get pay TV. Okay, so there's a button. Wait. So skip ad.
I'm Isaac Anthony, Patriot Update. I'm here to tell you the top 10 reasons not to vote for Obama.
Okay, so we got a little kid in jeans and a polo shirt with a toy pistol strapped on his hip, and Tom Cruise, Top Gun sunglasses on. Goose! Sorry, had to say that. This is
obviously his dad dressed it.
Yeah, and you know, I remember that button people used to wear to the school back when they were it said you're ugly and your mother dresses you funny.
Yeah,
this is that. Oh, dear God, David, what have you gotten us into? I've got the audio up about as far as it'll go. Hopefully it'll carry.
Okay.
Number 10. He takes money from people who work hard, and he gives to people who don't work at all.
Okay, the kid is standing in front of a bunch of logs with an axe in his hand, like he's Abe Lincoln the rail splitter. Now we switch over to a little girl all in pink sitting at the edge of a slicky slide.
Number 8, he thinks babies are a burden. Did you hear that, Levi? Number 7, he wants to keep people on welfare and food stamps so they will vote for him.
Wait a minute.
Conservative logic.
You can't even use the two in the same sentence now. You're threatening the essential fibers of the universe. Obama keeps people on welfare and food stamps so they will vote for him. You know what? This is child abuse.
Oh, without a doubt, it is.
And again, you know, time has slowed down for the video. Let's go back.
Number 6. He doesn't want Americans to drill for oil or mine for coal. Number 5. He lets bad guys into our country. Number 4. He wants to take guns away from good guys. Number 3. Mr. and Mrs. Obama are not proud of America, but I am. Number 2, he bows down to leaders from other countries. Embarrassing. And number 1, nobody knows where he came from. So don't vote for Obama.
Trying to make me drink, aren't you? Trying to make me start drinking, and not even halfway through the show, and you're trying to make me start drinking.
I think that's the...
Because nobody knows where... You know, I don't know who this kid is.
I think I know who funded that. That's the I Got Nothing Institute.
Isaac Anthony is a conservative 6-year-old who knows where he stands on political issues and the upcoming presidential election. You know what, though? This is a 6-year-old, and number 1, nobody knows where he came from. You caught that one, right, David?
Yeah.
Okay. Nobody knows where he came from, and he's 6 years old. So, guess what? You know Steve King we were talking about?
Yeah.
And you know how I kind of questioned whether, you know, I noted that Steve King is living proof that you don't have to have a functioning human brain in order to be a member of the House of Representatives?
Right.
Okay, so I got some more audio for you. Hopefully time won't slow down too much, David. You know, Monday we had the All Willard Memorial Moran Monday. This may be the Steve King edition of Prayer Meeting Wednesday. Little 6-year-old kid said, and nobody knows where he came from. Well, Steve King, when he's not explaining how he ain't never started no dog fights, but he's broke up a few, I'll finish it. Well, after he was done with that, he went on to explain, well, the problem with Barack Obama. And I'm not sure, but what little Isaac may be his nephew or something. Yeah, you'll see what I mean.
And Tracy, your question is, you know what, no one else does, though. After all the facts that have been presented, I would like to know why you aren't investigating Obama's ineligibility. Well, Tracy, I looked into that before he was sworn in for the presidency. We went down into the Library of Congress, and we found a microfiche there of two newspapers, only two newspapers in Hawaii. Each of them had published the birth of Barack Obama. I believe his birth date is August 4th. This was published on August 11th, if I'm not mistaken. But in any case, it would have been awfully hard to fraudulently file the birth notice of Barack Obama being born in Hawaii and get that into public libraries in that microfiche that they keep of all the newspapers published. That doesn't mean that there aren't some other explanations on how they might have announced that by telegram from Kenya. The list goes on. But
you got that, David?
Yeah.
Barack Obama's birth certificate in Hawaii was actually sent by telegram from Kenya.
Again, he's from the I Got Nothing Institute, too.
And I thought the Heritage Foundation was big.
Well, Bob, wait till you pay a visit to IGN Institute. It's
I got nothing.
Yeah, it's pretty scary. You know, the thing about this really interesting about when that kid said nobody knows where he came from. Well, he comes from a conservative family, so chances are they're not going to teach him sex education. So he may not even ever find out where Obama came from.
Well, that's entirely true. Or else he may find it out, much to his chagrin, very early in life, say about age 14. You know, because, you know, fundamentalist purity balls and all of that kind of
right,
stuff.
And then
right,
that comes to mind the Idiocracy scene with the football player.
I'm going to all of y'all.
Yeah, basically. Everything ties back to Idiocracy.
Every last bit.
Or Dr. Strangelove. Yeah, I've been thinking about the problems of complete distortion in our culture lately, and it's I don't know. It seems to be. I know a lot of progressives say some progressives say it's getting better, but I don't think that at all.
Better how?
I don't know. I think what happens is when people surround themselves in an echo chamber, and they just they constantly hear what they want to hear on these blogs and on these op-eds or these meetings or just like just constant repeating the same statements over and over again. You start to deny or ignore the world around you of all the people who are not clued in to what you're clued in. Like, for example, I saw everybody going crazy on Twitter. And I made a mention about it on Twitter, too. It was like about how Romney over in Europe, and I kept saying, I was like, nobody's going to care about this.
Well, how do you not care?
Forgotten. I mean, it's going to be forgotten because it's a
fact. It's certainly getting drowned out by the great big Chick-fil-A battle.
Right, the Chick-fil-A thing is definitely taking up a lot of.
Hey, David, ate one?
No, I have not. I have not ate one before. And you know, I don't get the big deal about Chick-fil-A and all these franchises because let me be honest, all of this stuff tastes almost exactly the same to me. It tastes like I'm going to Wendy's or wherever.
Well, you know, then you've never had a Chick-fil-A.
Oh, really?
Yeah, because until you've had a chicken breast that's been pumped up full of hormones and antibiotics and killed before its time and tormented a little bit before it got out of the chicken processing plant and then got blessed and sanctified by the head priest there that's at the loading dock of Chick-fil-A Central, and then they thaw it out and they put it through that breading mixture. It's got a whole shitload of powdered sugar in it. Well, and then they deep fat fry it in sanctified peanut oil, and they serve it up to you with some of them waffly fries, and you get yourself a peach shake. Well, if you'd been, you'd understand.
That one little
crappy ass bun with that hunk of chicken on it and them two miserable pickles.
It sounds like I can't pass it up. You know, you're making me want to contact Chaz the Intolerant Chicken and see if he can hook me up with a Chick-fil-A meal.
Yeah, jeez, that was brilliant. I don't watch television. I don't dare watch television because every time I haven't even watched Bourdain in forever, right? Every time I watch television, I walk away wanting to break something. Last night was just a little digression here, David. Last night was no different. Got done with the show and everything. Well, you know, I have this passion for archaeology and ancient societies, and I think a couple of nights ago I was even talking about Jared Diamond's collapse, where he was talking about how the Mayans wound up doing themselves out of an ecology in which to live, right? So Agnes says, "Hey, honey, come look. There's a show on TV, and they're going to Tikal." Now, Tikal is this. It's an ancient ruin city in Guatemala.
Mm-hmm.
And it turned out to be a program called Destination Truth. Now, you being the Horns Pop Culture correspondent, you probably know all about Destination Truth on the Sci-Fi Channel.
I actually don't, but I can either guess it's evangelical or religious based.
No, it's on the Sci-Fi Channel.
Okay, all right, then I know what direction it's going in.
And so we're sitting there, and it turns out that you get a couple of minutes of footage of Tikal in the daylight, and then everything goes dark, and it's shot through an infrared camera. And the host of the program starts whispering things into his microphone like, "My God, the cameras are going crazy." And, the thermal imager is freezing up. Now, mind you, we're in the jungles of Central America. And,
yeah,
you know, digital video cameras and things like that are very sensitive to things like ambient moisture and humidity. And they don't like water in any form. I mean, they just don't, the innards of those cameras. And then it turns out we've got an even broader problem with the word tectonic than I thought. Because, you know, Tuesdays are Titanic Tuesdays now because of those Titanic plates. And lo and behold, the host of this program, David,
mm-hmm.
He said, I can almost feel a cold breeze blowing at me, as if the spirit world didn't want us to be here. Now, I am not by any means discounting the spirit world, all right? Because you know, I fully buy into the notion from you know, that line from Shakespeare. You know, there are more things in this earth, heaven and earth, Horatio, than are dreamt of in your philosophy. I'm okay with that.
Right.
I know people who are plugged in, and I take them seriously when they tell me stuff.
I hear you.
But he's standing over a hole in a pyramid talking about the cool breeze blowing on him.
You know what I think he was?
I can't tune into television anymore, David, and I don't, that upsets me.
He was channeling the energy of the technotronic plates. He was trying to pump up the jam.
Oh, no, wait. Yeah, thank you. Because then he explained that there were, somewhere along in the program, that there were gases that came up out of the ground because of the they were gases. They were from the. They were Teutonic gases. Really? German gas? Really? Teutonic?
Oh, I Bob, I can top that one. I was listening to a podcast of Sasquatch hunting because I just wanted to hear. Again, another prestigious member of the I Got Nothing Institute.
Wait. Before you go any further.
Yeah.
All right, it's official. It's kind of like Beetlejuice. It's been said three times now. Somebody out there with some creative graphic art skills is going to have to work us up a logo for the I Got Nothing Institute.
Well, you know, if we really wanted to get the ball rolling and to see how many people we can get to be members of the I Got Nothing Institute, courtesy of the Head On Radio Network, we could just go to Zazzle and make our own.
Well, this is true. This is true. But, I mean, there are people in the Horn family who have profound graphic design skills. Mm-hmm. And you really want a pro job on this.
Yeah, I'm thinking of some great membership cards. So if anyone's skilled in membership card design, I'd like a I Got Nothing membership.
Yeah.
I Got Nothing Institute card.
Oh, and by the way, I am reminded by the chicken inspector there in the chat room. Oh, they're going wild tonight. We got Jesus Christ in the chat room. We got Sashimi Street.
Oh.
We got the chicken inspector. Satan was in there at one point.
Wow.
The chicken inspector just noted the new Titanic plate just came out from the Bradford Exchange. Oh, if only that goober only over in Beckley only knew how much fun we're having with him.
So here's the amazing
to send royalties.
Here's the amazing thing that just made me do like a double take on the whole Sasquatch hysteria, insanity, and how these people keep digging themselves even in the greater holes than you and I can ever imagine. So someone brought up on the podcast, he said, you know, a lot of people would say that the old Patterson footage is a complete hoax and a complete fraud. If you can't base anything on that, is there any actual video footage of Bigfoot that you know of? And I swear to God, this is how he answered. He said, "Well,
oh no,
you know, this is what he said. I'm not making it up, people. I'm not making it up." He said, "Well, you know," he goes, "the Native Americans who run a casino where I live by, they know that Bigfoot exists, and they have footage near their fence, but they can't release it because of their religion."
Jesus.
And then I just started thinking. I was like, everything.
But if they can't release it because of their religion, how does dude know it?
because he was told by someone from another prestigious member of the IGN Institute. They're all over the place. And see, that's the crazy thing about it. And the problem is there's no basis for anything. If you go on YouTube and search for Bigfoot footage, you see what looks like something that was filmed an outtake from Onion News.
Half of what's on TV started out as half of what is seriously on television now are rejected Onion bits. And I don't mean the stuff that, like, comes dried in a jar. Oh, did I just say comes dried in a jar? Jesus.
Dr. Freud, you want it back again.
He's gonna come. He's gonna come. Whoa! It's too much.
Yeah, I was thinking about like and just all of the shows. I don't watch them. I just watch the advertisements for them, or I hear them on the radio when I'm listening to talk radio. One of them is the Chasing UFOs. Which one?
God damn it, David, the thermal imager is frozen up!
Yeah, exactly, it's sort of like that. And you're thinking, like, you have no...
And you know what? Halfway through the segment, I'm looking at Agnes, and I'm looking at the TV, and I'm going, Bushmaster, Bushmaster, Fair de Lance, come on, Jaguar, something. Yeah. Oh, they got out. And you want the fun? You want the best part of this? The best part of this is that the host holds an actual degree in archaeology from Tufts University.
Oh, man.
This is what happens when people can't get work.
And just to bookend all of this, just so people understand, like, how exactly we're devolving. I go into a rock and mineral shop, and I can't escape the nonsense that people tell me about rocks and minerals. I will be there, and they will say, this is literally the answer to what every single rock does, why you need to get this rock. Oh, this is a nice amethyst. I like it. I'm thinking of buying it. You know, if you put that under your pillow, it's going to increase your health.
Well, you know, you're a music aficionado. Do you remember the great Alan Parsons Project tune, Pyramania?
I don't think so, no.
There are pyramids in my head. There's one underneath my bed, and my mate is getting cranky.
I'm gonna have to look this up.
Oh, no. Wait a minute. I'm not going to make you look it up. I'm nicer than that. No, wait a minute. There it is. Stand by. Here we go. This may be theme music for the IGN Institute. Kind of sounds like it, doesn't it?
Yeah, it does.
The one that always stopped me in my tracks. And the Mayan panoramas on my pyramid pajamas haven't helped my little problem.
You know, the whole thing about that really gets me is I know it's pretty much a franchise industry, the New Age world of selling lots and lots of rocks and minerals. Because, again, when you can't come up with a reason other than these rocks and minerals are really cool to look at, and they're interesting pieces of history on Earth. If you can't say that, then you have to resort back to magic and fairies.
Well, you know, every time we're driving into or out of D.C., I have to, and Agnes isn't with me, I have to call her as we're passing by the Smithsonian Institute of Natural History, because they've got a real live, honest-to-Jesus Olmec head out there in the yard.
Mm-hmm.
So I always have to just drive by, and she'll go, hello, and I'll say, Olmec head. Because I once sent her a picture of the Olmec head, and then sent her a picture of me and said, old man head.
Ah.
So, Ray just wrote in, and he said, let's see, Bigfoot exists, Romney's qualified to be president. What's the difference?
Well, you know, I think he definitely has a point.
I don't, you know, he gets to be president, and maybe Bigfoot will come out of the woodwork and go to the spaceport.
Maybe, but first we got to get the Native Americans to finally admit that they know they have footage and archives of
David. The truth is out there.
They know, and we need to maybe the IGN Institute can get right on that. And with that, I leave you to your next caller, and everybody, you should contribute and call in at 1-877-4-HEAD-ON.
Or 304-658-3333.
Oh, and one last thing. I know one thing that you haven't mentioned tonight. What is it, Bob?
Oh, the AIC Act.
There you go.
Yeah. The fact of the matter is we're focusing a lot on that. AICACT.org. Go there. Learn how you can be a part of the end of Appalachia's agony. You know, because we need folks calling their member of Congress. Still looking for folks to put a few calls into Representative Hanna's office there in upstate New York, since he's a little tired of the weirdos in the Republican Party. It would be really cool if he was to do something all normal and stuff, like support basic human rights in Appalachia.
Well, you know, Bob, every bit helps, and I'll let you know an update when I call my representative this month and see what representatives and see what they say.
Yeah, I would appreciate that. Let us know, and when
I
you do.
I hope that they be on board because we do live in vacation land, and there are a lot of pine trees and the forest and nature and crap like that all around us.
Yeah, which you actually find nice to have around you.
Right.
I mean, Maine would suck a lot if it was just a bunch of barren moonscape that would never grow anything but scrub grass again, right?
Well, you know, Bob, we're fighting it pretty hard because of LePage and a lot of the teabaggers who have just exited in the back entry, so to speak, and are messing up our government, messing up our school system even further than anyone could ever dream of.
Exactly. Well, have yourself a wonderful evening.
Even
after what you did to me with the conservative six-year-old.
Yeah, and everybody, I hope you look into the prestigious
IGN Institute.
Yes, it's really important.
Absolutely, absolutely. David, have a good night.
Later.
Bye now. Pop culture correspondent David, calling from Maine. By the way, well, let's see. Are you still there? I hope you are. Hey, welcome to the program.
Just you wait, Bob Kincaid. Just you wait.
Just you wait. I'll walk and talk just like a... Yeah, right.
God, Professor Higgins and Eliza Doolittle. My...
Well, you know, come to think of it, Jim, isn't Dr. Doolittle just the animal version of My Fair Lady?
I guess so, yeah.
But Rex Harrison was marvelous.
They all were, Bob. They were stars then.
Yep.
Compared to what we have now.
As Gloria Swanson noted, they had faces.
Yeah, it was only the pictures that got small.
Hear, hear. And, you know, that's a real consideration now. For instance, Ferg wanted me to take him to a movie in D.C., and all of a sudden I was hit by this wave of, you know, I don't really want to go to a movie theater right now. Because, I mean, I see enough weirdos buying bread in Walmart with 44 Magnums strapped on their hip.
Well, you know, I wish the old Biograph was still open over on Wisconsin Avenue because they showed real good movies. That was especially in D.C.
And you know what? I actually went so far as to look for movie theaters in D.C. Good luck. There's one. It's like the Hell Octoplex over at Gallery Place Chinatown, and that's it.
That's it. That's it. You got it. You got it. There's also a real good one that used to be right underneath Union Station. And, of course, built under all that concrete, the sound effects were just incredible.
Well, unfortunately, that one's gone.
Oh, that's truly sad because I spent many an evening in or afternoon in that particular theater.
Because I would have happily, you know, that was walking distance.
Yeah, I know.
But it is a real consideration because I looked at, you know, he wanted to go and see that movie with Mark Wahlberg and an animatronic teddy bear called Ted. And I said, you know, I'd like to see it too. I could use a good laugh, but by the same token, let's wait till it comes out on DVD because that's not really worthy of the big screen anymore. And it's true, you know, only the pictures got small.
That's right, right. Gloria Swanson or what's her name? What was the name of that film?
Nora Desmond.
Nora Desmond.
Or Norma Desmond.
With Eric Wasserheim as her.
Oh, it's brilliant. Sunset Boulevard?
Yeah, William Holden, Eric Wasserheim, and they had a host of other old silent actors in that film who actually played themselves.
And to be fair, Carol Burnett and Harvey Korman did a ongoing brilliant send-up of that.
Really?
Yeah, with Harvey Korman playing, and you know how brilliant he was in the Blazing Saddles. He was a tremendous comic talent. He played the Eric von Stroheim character, and Carol Burnett, of course, played the Nora Desmond. And it's some great moments in television comedy.
Oh yeah, I think I remember something about that. I do. Madonna's not at home tonight. He was something else. And, you know, Igmar Schreheim made major contributions to the theater.
Indeed.
I mean, he had been a little long-winded in a lot of his stuff, and a lot of his stuff couldn't have been produced because it was just too long and for the film at that time, but nonetheless, he certainly, he played some good roles afterwards, that's for damn sure. But the only reason I call tonight is to, and I'm very sad tonight because, you know, a great literary star has passed from the pay our viewing tonight.
Indeed. Well, and, you know, he was one of the last great literary, you know, writers and novelists are no longer full-on, no-kidding celebrities anymore. But Gore Vidal certainly was one.
You know, why, as it says, widely hailed as one of America's greatest men of letters, the aristocrat Vidal was a high-profile commentator on politics, including his bitter opposition to the war in Iraq and his belief that the United States had betrayed its humble roots to become an imperial power.
And you want to talk about a crowning achievement? I read somewhere earlier today, Jim, that 1L Michele Bachmann claimed that she was so disgusted by his book Burr that it turned her from a Democrat to a Republican.
Oh, really?
Did you? Yeah, I'm sure you've read Burr. I've read it three or four times. I adore that book. And I kept thinking that, what's disgusting about it? Except for the fact
what's disgusting about it is the person who made the comment, Michele Bachmann. She's one of the most disgusting people I've ever heard in my life or seen on television before I could, you know, hit the switch. I mean, she's just absolutely nuts.
But I mean, I'm trying to think if there. I found myself searching my memory, Jim, trying to remember, you know, if there was a some sort of really vile, filthy, dirty scene in Burr, and I'm damned if I can remember it.
There isn't any.
Now, there. Well, I don't, if nobody's read it, I don't want to be a spoiler or anything. But
ain't none.
Yeah, I mean, there's a couple of really interesting plot twists, and Vidal was known for the depth of his research, and he makes an allegation in that book that would be quite stunning if it was true. But what he doesn't do, what he also does is, you know, he tells the story from the standpoint of the aging Aaron Burr. And in the process, offers a rather scathing critique of Thomas Jefferson's treatment of him in the whole treason allegation thing.
Oh yeah.
But frankly, that's been borne out by history. Jefferson's conduct was scurrilous.
I know. Listen, I heard this an awful lot from a former next-door neighbor who's long passed, who was a direct descendant of Theodosia Burr.
Really?
Yeah, Kate Tomlin, a marvelous old lady who had this beautiful plantation called Fonda Flora up in Winsboro, South Carolina. And she was a character, let me tell you. And the things she would discuss with me and come over for a glass of shooting sherry. And all it took was one glass of shooting sherry to get Kate going.
Well, wait a minute. Whoa. Is that beyond the ordinary sherry, or have I missed out on something somewhere along the way?
Just something that you take before you went on a fox hunt.
Oh, okay.
Shooting sherry. That's basically where it came from. You know.
Yeah. Well, you know, Theodosia Burr married a wealthy man from South Carolina. So.
Alston. And Kate was descended directly from that family.
I'll be darned. Theodosia Burr was the absolute delight of Aaron Burr's life.
And disappeared mysteriously in the sea.
And was never heard from again. Mm-hmm. Exactly. Exactly.
Absolutely not. Absolutely not. No. She wasn't. And, like I said in my email to you earlier, you've been on a roll tonight, and why not?
I like to think of it as a croissant, but a roll will do, yes. Sorry.
Well, whatever, whether it's pizza bread, whether it's leavened, unleavened, or whatever, you know, it's...
But, you know, I owe a great debt of gratitude to Steve King for writing shows for me. You couldn't get this kind of material out of the staff writers of the Daily Show. Honest to Pete, equating dogfighting with rape and kidnapping and saying that rape and kidnapping aren't illegal in the United States. I mean, damn, Jim, really? At what point do you not just upend the bottle?
I don't know. I'm having one right now, and all I can say is, I never met a dog fight that it didn't stop. I mean, you know, what would be more nonsensical than that? I mean, good God.
I never started one, but I ain't afraid to finish them.
Oh, my God, Bob, where are these people coming from?
Well, no, I don't even think they're in the solar system. I was going to say Mars, but no. No, they may be those mysterious things that just cross over from other universes.
Well, I was just wondering about the...
They walk among us, you know?
The movie about the pod people and all that stuff, you know, it's just incredible the stuff that you hear and see and what these people pass off as the truth and how they try to cloak it in some raiment of veracity, which isn't even, well, it is transparent as a temple veil and Ren and Twain is fun. You know, it is. It's just crazy.
The idea that there's an ordained minister out there that wants a wholesale frog slaughter to punish the Jim Henson Productions.
Why? May I ask why, please? Maybe I tune in later. Maybe I call something.
No. This fundamentalist radio talking Christian minister who's mad at Jim Henson. Jim's dead, of course, but mad at the Henson Company because they've withdrawn their product. They've refused to provide toys for Chick-fil-A Happy Meals, you know, because Chick-fil-A is a bigoted, homophobic organization, and they're not, and the Henson Production Company isn't. And this guy's on the air calling for Chick-fil-A to offer up frog leg sandwiches because and alleging that Kermit is gay, and Jesus Christ, you know. There's you know what, Jim? There's no basement. There's no bottom with these people. There's no end. You think they've gone as low as they can? Really, Kermit the Frog?
Well, don't you know that the Emperor Wang from the planet Porno has been sending sex rays onto the Earth and is causing people to go gay?
Dear God.
If you don't believe it, look at Flash Gordon.
Isn't that Flesh Gordon?
Flesh Gordon, excuse me. Have you seen that film?
Okay, I said earlier I'd never watched porn, but I didn't watch porn, but I've
seen it. It's not porn.
Well,
it's not porn at all.
No, it's parody.
I mean, you would think, you know, if you ever see the film Flash Gordon, you know, that's when the Earth is bombarded by sex rays, and when these sex rays hit the surface of the Earth, people fall among themselves in reckless abandon to the person next to them.
Right, and thus falleth the civilization. You know, an interesting observation just came in from Irish Dave that'll probably speak to you. He notes as far as, you know, Burr turning off 1L Michelle. He said, she read Myra Breckinridge, but it took Burr to turn her? And, there's an odd. Maybe she thought she was reading Burr, but she had Myra Breckinridge in her hands.
Well, I think Michelle Bachman, quoting from John Huston, who played Buck Loner, just needs a good old Buck Loner special right between her eyes.
Oh, golly Moses. It's tough. It's just tough to get through sometimes.
It is, Bob. I'll tell you, it's just, you know, just when you think that it's gotten crazier, it gets crazy.
No, there's no let up.
You don't get a
breather. I mean, we've done all of this stuff, and I've still got probably 30 stories sitting here. I could do 6 more hours of absolutely insane right-wing lunacy.
Oh, I know.
Yeah, now see, the challenges are coming in. There's rape. That's just all Caligula. Well, of course I did. That was supposed to be art.
McDowell.
Yeah, but one of those great old actors died to get out of doing the movie.
Oh, I don't remember that, but I remember that it was just basically porno. You know, it was just lots of
gratuitous, yeah.
Yeah, you know, and ejaculation and all this kinds of stuff. I mean, and, you know, when I first saw it, I thought, this is just tired.
So well.
You know, if you got to go to a DVD or a VCR to see that, then you have had an extremely boring sex life.
Well, there goes the toaster for tonight, Jim. I think you just took that one home.
You think?
I think.
My God in heaven. I mean, you know, it is, you know, one thing I've always believed in, it's not a spectator sport.
No, it really isn't.
No, really. I mean, you know, if you don't have, I guess for people who are so deprived that they have to see it and not experience it, well, I feel sorry for them, and, you know, that's all I can say about that, and I'm not going to pass judgment, but if that's what they want to do, if they want to go to some type of theater, or if they want to get some type of DVD or whatever.
Yeah, poor old Fred Willard getting busted.
I like Fred Willard. I mean, he was a great actor, and, you know, poor thing.
Well, what did they think was going on in that movie house?
Well, I mean, you know, I've been to movie houses like that. Like, one time I went to the Adonis Theater in New York, and, you know, there were just people in there with raincoats on, and, you know, doing, you know, taking matters into their own hands. And, you know.
You know what, Jim? The world missed a lot by your not having been like a documentarian who just. Because, yeah, I would rather, you know, I'd far rather tune into a cable channel and see Adventures with Jim than, you know, some loopy idiot talking about Teutonic gases coming out from under the pyramids.
Teutonic gases. Well, I guess Hitler must be down there, and he must have farted because he did have a problem with meteorism, didn't he?
I suppose so, Jim. I suppose so. All right.
I'll tell you, they used to be this in Columbia, South Carolina, one of those art theaters, so to speak. And, you know, some friends and I just got real high. We went to see Debbie Does Dallas and all those kinds of stuff. And one night, it burned down. It actually burned down. It was probably arson because the owner couldn't make, you know, whatever. So he burned it down. And sure enough, it did. And said, you know, well, I guess those hot movies must have started a fire.
Must have been, yeah. Flaming, as it were.
Flaming, as it were. Just like I told you that story about that tent revival they had back in the 50s, back in Camden, South Carolina, my hometown, and somebody burned it down, and it had the sign on the front of it called Red Hot Preaching every Saturday night.
Yeah.
Remember that story?
Yes, I do. Reminds me of this cup that I keep here in the studio. From the Cornerstone Community Church, that on the back of it says, Need Field Up? Yeah.
There you go.
Yeah. Oh, by the way, we've heard both from Ray and from Ron and Raleigh, who have both written in to remind us it was Sir John Gielgud who died to get out of doing Caligula. Died halfway through. So.
I can't imagine him being in something like that.
Yeah, I think it was. Jim, you have yourself a wonderful evening.
Time to you.
All right, bye now. Our buddy Jim with tonight's toaster. Hey, welcome to the program.
Hello?
Hello.
Yes, hi. Am I on the air?
You are.
Oh, thank you very much. I didn't realize how your phone system worked.
Well, I wish I had a producer, but it's a low rent operation.
Well, please forgive me. I'm delighted to talk with you. I'm only a fan of literally about a month. I had heard about you, and
can we work with a first name?
Yes, I'm sorry. My name is Harry. I'm in Washington, D.C.
Oh, okay. Hi, Harry.
Hi, how are you?
I'm well.
You are, even though you're still a radio host, you have already become a legend in your own time. And I must have heard about you maybe from Mike Malloy mentioning you or something.
Mike is a great friend.
Yes, and one night, I guess after his show, there was a tape of one of your shows where you were just brilliantly dissecting. I think it may have been something that Brian Fisher was saying.
Oh, dear God.
Yes, but you were so good at that, I just said, who is this? And I suddenly realized it was the Bob Kincaid. So
I didn't even know I merited a the.
Well, you're much too modest. No, you're. I've been listening to your show now for several weeks with great joy, and I very much appreciate the fact that you're still working, still on the at least on the air in some way. I'm listening to you on the internet myself.
Oh, well, that's the only way you can,
right,
really.
Exactly, but I mean, I found the mainstream is what I'm saying.
Awesome.
I was glad to find it, and through the White Rose Society.
Well, everything comes through there, but it goes out to a whole bunch of platforms. But no, always glad to hear from a first time caller.
Thank you. Well, and, no, I'm honored to be for you to take my call. The main thing I wanted to talk about was actually to follow up on something that your wonderful cultural correspondent Dave said earlier. But I just wanted to interject though about Washington D.C. and movie theaters. And you were right that the best ones have probably gone, but there are one or two or a few left. There is the still unrenovated, in other words, undivided Uptown Theater on Connecticut Avenue, which is still, a large movie theater.
I didn't know.
Yeah, shows just one movie. In fact, that's where a lot of the openings that are done in the Washington, D.C. area are done. Because it is such a sort of an old, classy movie theater. It's not been made into multiplexes.
Right.
And then there's somewhat of a new company in town. Now, you mentioned there is a complex now near the Verizon Center near Chinatown.
Right. That's the only one. It's huge.
Yes, it is. Yeah, but there's also, I think it's maybe even the same company. There's one at... called the E Street Theater, which is about E and 10th Street.
Okay.
Slightly smaller, not as many multiplexes, but a very well-run operation. And it has another sibling, which is up in downtown Bethesda, which, as you know, is like a sort of city suburb of Washington.
Right, right, right.
And
yeah, I'm slowly getting to the point where I can make my way around outside the federal district. I still haven't learned Georgetown and up Wisconsin Avenue and that stuff. That's just still a very, very foreign world to me. But
anyway, in case you were looking for a movie theater again when you were there in Washington, I knew you were there last week. The E Street Theater, as I said, on E Street at about, I think it's 10th or 11th.
Okay.
And then, as I said, they also have a sibling. Theater in a more less congested area, which is in downtown Bethesda, right outside of Washington, which is accessible by the Metro Red Line.
Oh, okay.
So that's just for. I'm sorry, I had to just drop that in.
Oh no, believe me, I appreciate all the help I can get. We went, we've been slowly working our way outward and exploring various parts of the city, depending on where we are. We've stayed in some hotels and stuff, doing the work up there.
Sure.
So I'm learning little bits and pieces. This past weekend, we walked up into Eastern Market and had a nice walk around there. What a wonderful place that is.
Yes, yes. Although, as you know, it actually had burned down, about 2 years ago now. And
but it looks like it's been nicely brought back. And I'm a fan of all things pickled. And there was a company there out of Baltimore called In a Pickle, and had the best, freshest, and brought some home with me, pickled green tomatoes. God, they were wonderful.
Yeah. Well, no, the city fathers were wonderful in realizing that they had to rebuild Eastern Market because it was such a wonderful place, and I'm glad that it's back to the point where everybody's enjoying it again.
It's a lot of, there's, it's, I love the town. I absolutely adore it.
Yeah. Well, it is a very manageable, you know, it's a great place to live, and, you know, there are some...
It's a hell of a place to get into or out of, though. I think we have to admit that. I don't think I've ever driven out I-66 that there wasn't a traffic jam in one direction or the other.
Oh, yeah. Oh, I-66 is the worst. Yeah. That's...
And then there are just crazy people on the Beltway. But no, what blew my mind was driving into D.C. a week ago Sunday.
Yes.
We were in, you know, it was Ferg and me. It was perfectly legal. It was Sunday evening, and we were actually rather significantly violating the speed limit. And this lady in a gold tone recent model Volvo, we were over in the HOV lane doing 78 miles an hour.
Yes.
And this lady in a gold tone recent model Volvo, only person in the car, comes up, pulls up on my bumper and starts flashing her high beams at me.
Oh dear.
Like she's having some sort of Autobahn moment. I mean, I understand the dynamics of the left lane. But
yeah,
we were over there because we were supposed to be.
Right. No, it's not your fault. Unfortunately, you know, I've lived here about 2 decades, and I had actually spent a little bit of time in California, in the Los Angeles area. And I have to say, since I came here, the Washington, D.C. highways have, you know, begun to resemble, you know, the worst problems of the freeways in the Los Angeles area.
Well, I mean, this lady pulls out into the lane to the right of us and you know, never passing on the right. I'm teaching a 16-year-old how to drive, right?
Oh, absolutely. No, that's
And she comes and she doesn't just pass us on the right. She pulls even and you know, you can do the when somebody's cussing real good, you can read lips pretty easily. And she's sitting there just dog cussing Ferg in the passenger seat.
Mm.
And I'm thinking, you know, lady. And so she got around us, got back in the HOV lane, rode up on the bumper of the next person, started doing her high beam trick again.
No, I'm sorry to say that the manners of DC drivers have, at least in the last 10 years, have deteriorated significantly to the point where a lot of local commentators, you know, have talked about it. And, you know, the congestion level has risen, but also the, you know, deterioration in manners has just been, very, very visible. And, you know, I don't know how long you've been driving in and out of D.C., but as I said, I certainly know that in the last 10 or 15 years, you know, people's driving habits and manners have gotten just...
But on the other hand, when you get into town, I have yet to have merchant staff and staff at, like, museums and hotel staff, you know, are all incredibly friendly.
Yeah.
Especially when I compare it side by side with, like, say, people in the train station in Brussels.
No, it's still a very polite city in general, and particularly as a, you know, when you're a pedestrian or on the street. But definitely there's something about the driving culture, unfortunately, that has worsened a great deal. And a lot of people, it's not just me, a lot of people have talked about this. So it has nothing to do with you and that. I'm sorry about that night on...
Well, I'm just learning slowly. I've adopted a drive like the cabbies drive mentality inside the town, and that seems to work.
It's a sort of a defensive behavior, unfortunately, which it shouldn't have to be.
Yeah, I don't swear well in any language except English, but apart from that, no. Try to get out of the way, stay out of the way, and yeah,
right.
you'll be doing fine.
Right. But I just want to let you know, it was not the main topic I called about, but I just want to let it wasn't you, and you know the that the driving, it's definitely the culture of driving here on the freeways has gotten much worse. What I did want to just, and I hope I don't want to take up you know, all of your time and let other people call in, but I did want to mention briefly your cultural correspondent, you know, Chris, you've talked about this a lot, you know, about the lack of logic or even, you know, reasonableness that we have, you know, a number of our politicians in D.C., the way they behave, and you mentioned some of, you know, Representative King tonight, but I don't know, are you aware of this, the whole culture, I mean, I understand that in D.C., just, you know, the most craziest things are being said these days, and it's very, very depressing to me. Very, very, it's very sad, you know, that we have our highest public officials, people saying that, you know, really the nuttiest thing. And I know you know that because you've been, you know, you've been playing lots of, you know, live taped, you know, segments of people saying things. But in the culture at large, and I'm sure you're aware of this too, you know, there's just this strange attitude towards reason and, you know, or even science or even the methods of science. It's just, and I'm sure you're aware of that too, and certainly, you know, during the Bush era, you know, there were books like The Republican War on Science.
Yeah, oh, absolutely.
But even now, I find even, frankly, even in somewhat so-called, you know, sort of, and again, I think it mostly is on the right, but even some kinds of, sometimes even on the left or new age side of things, you know, you find the nuttiest things. I don't know if you've heard of this, it's not really a law, it's a sort of an attitude called the law of attraction.
Yes.
And, you know, there was a movie and a book called The Secret, which supposedly told of all of the, how old this law was and where it came from and how, you know, how it could be used and everything. And I know that there are, and as I said, I spent a few years out in California, and there are these new age groups and institutions, and these are, you know, sometimes very educated people who, you know, attended very, you know, very good universities, pushing the law, sort of the modern law of attraction. And I was so, you know, I think it's a very, it's very bad. It's certainly bad for psychology and for people, you know, who are trying to get help with their problems, because the law of attraction, you may know, basically says that if you sort of, if you think about it and want it and put yourself in positions where you're likely to attract it, then you will get something. You know?
Well, isn't that, I mean, it,
yeah, go ahead.
Isn't that, isn't one, the first thing I thought of when you mentioned it was the permutation of it that Norman Vincent Peale made a blue fortune off of, the power of positive thinking.
Yes, it's related, and some people have related it to the sort of modern.
And Oral Roberts had, since this is Wednesday,
yep.
Oral Roberts had seed faith, along the same lines. And frankly, you can make an argument, I believe, that the so-called prosperity gospel practiced by the likes of Creflo Dollar and Joyce Myers and Kenneth Copeland and that gang, is the same, where Joel Osteen and that Saddleback Church guy, where they've argued that, you know, if you just believe hard enough and give lots of money to them, that God is somehow going to up your credit limit, or you're going to win the lottery, and good thing, you'll be driving a Mercedes, you'll be driving a nice new Volvo behind some guy and screaming at it, whatever.
Yes, I agree absolutely. They're very closely related. And what I wanted to just mention is the fact that even, unfortunately though, even if you were not a, you know, evangelical or a prosperity preacher, this law seems to have creeped up in kind of, you know, almost in circles which are more sort of atheistic or more New Age and, you know, less involved in churches. And the modern version, I became so disturbed about this that I tried to figure out, you know, what is the sort of the source, or who first, you know, seemed to be, where did the law of attraction come from? And because I've heard even, you know, as I said, in a sort of well-meaning, educated, not particularly religious, you know, people talk about it as if it were some sort of, you know, psychological thing that you could actually will, you know, something. And therefore, and, you know, and sort of the converse of it is, of course, is that if you are not thinking positively, and this goes back to what you said about Norman Vincent Peale and even, you know, his more recent successors, you know, that somehow you won't get it because you're not thinking positively, you know. And I think that's a very, it's a real disservice to people, you know, who have serious problems. And, you know, if you accuse them that, you know, it's your own fault because you're not thinking positively and you're not using the law of attraction.
Yeah, and there's a big difference, for instance, between that and I remember the great book that went around, I read it late, Zen and the Art of Archery.
I read that a long time ago.
And I was reminded of that, though, because the first world records of the London Olympics were recently set by a legally blind archer from Japan by the name of Im Dong-hyun.
Mm-hmm. Uh-huh. I've heard of, I didn't know my name, but I've heard of the, you know, his skills.
So, yeah, there's a big difference.
There's a big difference between, you know, putting in the effort and whatever, you know, and trying, yeah, I mean, there's a big difference, you know, in terms of, I mean, if you want to attempt something and if you're, you know, you put in the effort and you put in the hours and maybe there's, you know, a little bit of luck, et cetera, and you have some talent that is able to, you know, you're able to develop, that's one thing. But to say that, you know, you can just sort of think about something or say, oh, I'm going to want this, like I'm going to think about the fact that I want to make, you know, $100,000.
It hasn't worked thus far with the lottery for me.
I'm sorry?
It hasn't worked thus far with the lottery for me.
Well, here's the thing. What I wanted to tell you was, talk about craziness in terms of, you know, because this, and I, you know, if you go on the internet, you'll see a lot of mention to it, even among people who claim to be, you know, sort of therapists or spiritual, you know, psychologists, et cetera. And it worries me because, you know, there's nothing, well, as I found out, there's not even anything remotely close to a scientific source for it. The modern version of the law of attraction, which is sometimes called the Hicks-Abraham law of attraction, has to do with the fact that there are these people, and they're somewhere, I'm not sure where exactly where they live. I believe it's somewhere on the lower southern East Coast, named Jerry and Esther Hicks. And they have a little empire of both books and CDs about the law of attraction. And if one researches this, as I did a little bit, one finds out, in fact, they have a book, one of their early books was called The Law of Attraction. And it turns out that they, quote, discovered the law of attraction because although they portray themselves as sort of normal suburban people, although I did notice at one point that they mentioned that they drove a Cadillac, which just suggests some affluence. Literally, one day, Esther Hicks suddenly started channeling things and literally started, and this is in their book about the law of attraction, channeling some ancient spirit named Abraham, not the Abraham of the Bible, but just some other, you know, spirit somewhere in some other universe. And Abraham proceeded in various sessions that they had with him, in a sense, being channeled through Esther Hicks, talking about various, you know, kinds of wisdom of the universe, and one of them was the law of attraction. And so this is apparently where this, at least the modern law of attraction, comes from. It comes from this ancient spirit named Abraham who one day decided he was going to become part of Jerry and Esther Hicks' life.
Got to wonder if there were seeing stones involved.
But the thing is, if you go on the internet, you will see that they have a website and they have written a number of books and they have put together a number of CDs and sell all these things. I mean, they have a small publishing empire. And it is all based on, certainly a lot of it, on their, you know, being, in a sense, quote, given the law of attraction by this.
Well, what you're talking about is, I think, definable under the general rubric, anthropologically speaking, of, you know, cult behavior. And I'm not talking, you know, we've attached this pejorative meaning to the word cult. And we automatically start thinking of Guyana and Moonies and,
right,
and Krishna
right.
consciousness and all.
Sure.
No. Almost all organizations that have a spiritual quality to it begin as cults and evolve therefrom. And so this, you know, this is what you're, even if they, oh, no, we're purely secular. Saying that you're purely secular does not mean that you're not, somehow involved in a cult and that someone is not occupying the position of the shaman. Now, some of this may be Joseph Campbell stuff. I don't know. But I think there's validity to it.
Oh no! In fact, I think that's a very well. I got it. I must. I'll say this on a. No, it's very perceptive of you. There was actually a famous researcher of cults, psychologist, affiliated with the University of California, Berkeley, and I'm blocking her name now, but she was well known, and she wrote a book, you know, about cults, and indeed, yeah, it has more to do with the dynamics than about the religious associations. And she, in fact, in this book, talked about, you know, sort of the three sort of main, you know, methods of, in a sense, of cults. And indeed, one of them had to do with just having a leader who somehow you believe has something special, you know, to offer that you don't have. And I'm sure.
And so often is the time, I think, that we see, particularly in the right wing in this country,
yeah,
the rise of little cults and mini cults. I mean, I think you could define whoever those incredibly strange people were, who, for instance, ran out in early Republican primaries and cast votes for 1L Michelle Bachmann.
Yes, exactly. Well, right, and I was just thinking that. Yes, and with all respect. With all due respect to all of our elected representatives, yes, I mean, I do not understand people's, respect for what Michelle Bachmann says. I mean, it is just...
Well, then obviously you get what I'm talking about when I say that I just want to spend a little time wandering around... the neighborhoods in Steve King's district or Michelle Bachmann's district, just not, you know, just sort of maybe sitting in the car like one of those Google spy cars that takes pictures for Street View and stuff,
yeah.
And just walking, watching. Well, you know, Brother Albert a while back was talking about if we could get Sir David Attenborough to narrate the Jersey Shore. It's that kind of thing. Where you just want to drive into a Michelle Bachmann neighborhood,
yes,
and maybe drive, you know, just be as surreptitious as possible, and just park along the street near a house with a Bachmann sign in it.
I couldn't agree more. It is, as you said, it's almost you want to become an anthropologist and find out.
Well, I don't think you can properly analyze this behavior without being one.
No, I agree. I think it's a great metaphor, and I mean, and it's a great, you know, perspective, because I do not understand how, and I'm not just, you know, dumping on Michelle Bachmann. I mean, there are others that we can talk about. As you
oh, dump. I mean,
well, no, I mean, there's Steve King, and well, there's Alan West from Florida.
Sure.
You know?
The Phil Gingrey from Georgia.
Oh,
Jim. You know, and you know, these are people who have little discrete, relatively small. Discrete congressional districts. Take a place like South Carolina, Stan, on the other hand, and consider, you know, just drive through the state and look for people with Jim DeMint signs in their yard.
Oh, yeah. Well, actually, I was just talking to somebody about that the other day, you know, who is, you know, who lives in South Carolina and who's absolutely afraid of this man. And
for good reason.
Yeah, yeah.
Or, you know, the experience that I had tooling around western Wisconsin and seeing signs in yards that said, "I stand with Scott Walker," and having my genial host Bruce say, "Yeah, well, there's a house that belongs to somebody who thinks he's got enough money to actually be a Republican."
Yes.
And he doesn't understand that they'd him on in a country minute if they thought they could get whatever he has.
Yes.
But, you do. You want to sit there, you know, get out the little long-range telephoto zoom lens and you know, maybe very carefully, like, walk up and greet one.
Yes, right, and find out what they're about.
Well, you know, right. How long will it take past hello, hi, how are you, the niceties, before they start babbling insane things? I mean, I saw the same, you know, I had the same urge in Kentucky driving by houses that said, Rand Paul for freedom.
Oh my, yeah.
And the ones that really, really send me around the bend, though, you know, if I see a Rand Paul sign in a well manicured big yard with a big house and maybe a horse barn and a garage that's better than my house, and okay, I go, all right, yeah, fine, yeah, you support Rand Paul,
right.
I expect you to.
Yeah, yeah.
But it's the guy who blows by you on the interstate doing 90 in a rusted out 25-year-old pickup truck with one wheel wobbling and has the Rand Paul sticker. You know, I don't necessarily want to talk to that guy. I want that guy off the road.
Yeah. Well, And, you know, and well, it brings up a related question, but yeah, it's, you know, as you said, I mean, you want to be an ethnographer and sort of figure out, yeah, what kind of people are these? What are their, you know, habits? And then, unfortunately, as you just mentioned with this, you know, person who speeds by you in a rusty car, you know, are these people, do they understand who they're voting for and what their representatives are going to do in Congress? In other words, are these people voting somehow against their own interests in ways they don't even understand? And that's, you know, of course, the more, I suppose somebody will label me, you know, too, you know, elitist or intellectual for talking about that. But
and that's, you know, that's the other side. I'm aware of that. That, you know, when I do my hillbilly accent or when I make sport of some of these people, I just said these people.
Well, that's right.
That there is a risk of sounding somehow elite, but it is not elitism. It is straight up, I don't understand, confusion.
Yes, well, for me too, and also, frankly, I sometimes feel great sadness because when I talk to somebody or hear about somebody who is going to vote for one of these people and who, in a sense, will be harmed if that person is reelected, you know, I feel like, how can I help this person, you know, the voter, how can I help this person from basically doing something self-destructive in a sense? And again, you know, that may sound elitist, but no, it's, for me, it's...
And when you, and you know, it's one thing, for instance, there's Michelle Bachmann's district in Minnesota.
Yeah.
Well, not too terribly far away. There's a whole bunch of normal people that send Keith Ellison to Congress.
Exactly, right. Well, Minnesota has, you know...
Yeah, but what do you do when it's Alabama? And you know that there are a lot of people who would like to have decent representation.
Yes.
But live in a state whose political system is so thoroughly manipulated and utterly corrupted that they don't have a prayer of ever getting decent representation. Ever.
Yes, well, you're absolutely right. I mean, it's that's even sadder, I suppose.
And it's on the one hand the people who, you know, vote out of racial bias, things like that. I mean, my own state is a case in point with the fact that the registered Democrats here in our primary, 40% of them voted for a convicted felon sitting in a prison in Texas rather than voting for that one that's waging a war on coal. When there's no war on coal, okay?
Yeah.
There's no war on coal.
Yeah.
But they have been told by the coal industry relentlessly that Obama wants to take your job away.
Right, right. Well, this is where it all converges, which is, do people, you know, when they hear something and read anything, you know, read about the law of attraction or hear about, you know, or like when Alan West says that, you know, the universal health care is going to enslave people, you know, Obama's a slave.
the 6-year-old from David's sound clip.
Yeah, right.
That's a 6-year-old.
Yeah.
I mean, that's just rotten. That's,
yes, it is. Yes.
That is child cruelty. Let the kid be a 6-year-old, for God's sakes.
It's exploitation. I don't know if you read, I don't want to get off the topic, but I don't know if you read the story about this young man. I forget where he was from. Maybe Georgia. He was a speaker at the annual conservative, you know, CPAC convention.
Mm-hmm.
When he was, I gather, he was about 12 or 13. And somehow he ended up being on a panel there and became kind of a mini celebrity. And he recently came out. He's now about 17 or 18 and wrote an op-ed. Actually, he was interviewed and then had to write an op-ed basically saying that he realized that he was wrong about his belief in, you know, very conservative values. And he was then, even though he was, you know, the darling of the movement when he was 12 or 13 and appeared at this convention, when he then came out, you know, recently and said that he had changed his mind, he was totally trashed. You know, I mean, the leaders of the conservative movement, you know,
yeah,
turned on him.
David Frum. David Frum.
Yes. No. Well, David Frum is a little older. This is a gentleman who's only like in his first year of college.
Oh, yeah.
I forget his name, but you probably read about it.
But whether it's him or it's David Frum.
Well, David Frum, right, had the same experience. That's right, except a little older.
They will turn on you and you know, cast you adrift in an open boat, and then once you're far enough out, they'll start shooting.
Yes. Although, you know, luckily, at least for people who think is.
But this is what happens. This is what happens when politics becomes orthodoxy.
Yes, absolutely.
Because the nature of orthodoxy is that it is never, ever, ever subject to any sort of intellectual challenge.
Yes.
You have to be this way because this way is the only way you can be this way and be us.
Yes, you're. In fact, that's another very good thing to say. I think you're right. It is an orthodoxy, and in a way, this is why, to me, although I've lived here a long time now, D.C., you know, these days is so much scarier. Because instead of people just disagreeing or, you know, having, you know, arguments about policies, it's about orthodoxy, as you just said.
And well, as frustrating as it can sometimes be to think about, to those of us who are, you know, like me, dyed-in-the-wool progressive. By the way, you're getting fan mail.
Oh, I am too. No, I am too.
No. I'm not kidding.
Admit here, I don't say it a lot in D.C. a lot because I'm afraid of, you know, I'm going to get, mugged by somebody. But
no, I'm not. I'm very serious. Jim, who we were talking to a few minutes ago,
yes,
said he's very much impressed by your commentary and your ideas.
Oh, he's much too kind.
But what I was going to say though is some of us are put off, for instance, when we find out the degree of alleged collegiality that takes place in these governing bodies. For instance, you know, it was said that Ted Kennedy could be a vociferous opponent of right-wing politics, but yet there were hardcore right-wing senators who shed tremendous tears at his death. I remember his funeral. What was it? Orrin Hatch.
Yeah, well, Orrin Hatch, yes, was said to be a very good friend of his. Yeah,
and
go ahead. I'm sorry.
And I don't, you know, that obtained in a day when people sat down and tried to find compromise positions. But the reason I think, and I don't think it is unjustified on your part where you are, the reason that it's more nerve wracking is because that is largely gone.
It is, and that is indeed what scares me a lot. And, you know, of course, I mean, there were things, you know, you read about legendary friendships, you know, long before I arrived here, you know, Lyndon Johnson and, what was his name, Republican, whose name escapes me right now.
No, but I know of what you...
Yeah, and, you know, they had, you know, so he, I mean, they, yes, there were some great, even, you know, well, Tip O'Neill, even with perhaps with Ronald Reagan.
That's the one that's often brought up. But
right, although, yeah, I don't know the extent of it.
Well, it seemed like Tip O'Neill was always getting the short end of the end of the friendship.
Right. So yeah, well, he was a very, you know, very down-to-earth person. But, yeah, no, it is, well, certainly right now it is largely gone, you know. And
well, and the, I think the inquiry then is, can it come back? And you know that comes back around full circle to the question we were asking about, you know, districts that send the likes of Steve King and Michelle Bachmann and on and on and on. There, as it's a function of media, it's a function of the incredible power of the right wing, and the degree to which the so-called left—I don't think there really is one—has not even fought back. You know, this is a long-running thesis of mine about progressive media and progressive because my thing is radio, progressive radio. That we don't understand that if there is a competition field of ideas, and one side abandons that field and that contest entirely to the other side, then no one has any way of validating any sort of disagreement, even, and thus they become sucked into that orthodoxy we were talking about.
Yeah.
You know, if we're not there, then how can we expect anybody to be on our side? Because we don't have a side to be on.
Yeah. Well, you know, it's funny. In part, one of the underlying reasons I called was, in a sense, to express my admiration for what you're doing, because it is true that in terms of the mainstream media, it's not clear anymore that there are people trying to, you know, in a sense, truly, courageously separate fact from fiction. You know, and it has been written about it. In fact, there was an article, I forget where it was, in some newspaper about 6 months ago, talking about how, and this, of course, has been, I think, known for a while, that, you know, the major network reporters and, you know, people you tend to, for example, see on the Sunday morning, you know, television news programs, a lot of them just will not, you know, in a sense, really challenge their interviewees because a lot of these people themselves have become part of this, you know, the Washington social circle, and they see these people at parties, and so they don't want to offend them, or they're afraid if they do that they won't be invited to certain parties anymore.
Right, or if you are part of the media mainstream, then you fear that you will not be you will be denied access. There's this,
yeah, right, which has happened. Bush did, in fact, you know.
Well, and now both sides have entered into this new phase of where they're trying to redefine journalism by demanding that journalists present quotes back to them for approval before they can run quotes that people gave as quotes.
Yes, which I know that.
And at that point in time, you're pretty much running headlong into TASS and Pravda land, aren't you?
Yes, you are. And in fact, I just read a wonderful book where even a science journalist was, to some extent, bemoaning the fact that even in science journalism, that he worries greatly about that too many reporters, or too many interviewees demand, you know, the reporters tell them what the quotes were so that they can, you know, review them.
And it's, you know, it utterly defeats any concept of free exchange of information. Well, I got to tell you, this has been a magnificent conversation, and I hope it will not be our last.
Oh, well, you're very kind. I want to obviously let many other people speak with you, but I'm just delighted that I was able to call in and talk with you this evening.
Well, anytime, and I'm serious when I say that.
Well, you're very kind, and thank you so much. And I do want to just, you know, basically say that I'm behind you, and I hope that, you know, I am a supporter, and I think it's wonderful that you are, you know, trying to not only, you know, say what scientifically we say approaches the truth, but also speaking that truth to power, because, you know, that's so important.
Well, thank you very much. I do appreciate it.
Fan, and I it's an honor to speak with you.
Take care. Have a good night.
Okay. Bye-bye.
Bye now. Well, Agnes is going to have to put the C-clamp on my head again. I appreciate the kind words, but by the same token, none of this happens. I'd say 90% of the good stuff that happens here is not stuff that necessarily comes out of my mouth as it is out of yours. It is about... Well, let's see. The clock on the wall's wrong. Okay, yeah, it's about 16 minutes before the hour. A little time left for your conversation if you want to jump in. 877-443-2366. We call it Prayer Meeting Wednesday, what we do on Wednesday evenings here. But unlike a traditional church service, you know, you actually get to participate in some meaningful fashion besides hollering amen from the back of the room and trying to be out the door before the Church of Christ people across the street so you can get to the cafeteria earlier. Right? Yeah. Big praise for the previous, yeah. Welcome to the Horn family. Welcome to the Horn family indeed. Alright, well let's try to keep the conversation going. Welcome to the program.
Hey, this is Juanita.
Well, hey Juanita.
I've been trying to email you, but my cat has messed up my...
cat typing again?
I can't type on it. I was so interested, I forgot the gentleman's name you just talked to.
Richard? Yes.
Yeah. I'm so glad to hear from someone like him. He's very thoughtful and knowledgeable. And I wanted you I'm not going to take very long, but I just wanted you to know that I've been through all those different things, you know, about think what you want and you get it and all. I've gone from what he called the metaphysical or new age to the right wing when I was in, tried to get involved in that.
Mm-hmm.
And it's all from the same demonic sources, I think. And, you know, and now they're coming out more. You heard what, who's running for president?
Oh, Willard?
Yeah, the one, what he said in about the, Palestinians.
Oh, yeah, that they're culturally inferior?
Yeah. And these things are coming more out in the open, you know, what people really think like that.
And the thing is, Juanita, is there's a lot of people that really think like that.
Oh, yeah.
The fetishization, for instance, of Israel.
Yeah.
And I don't use that word in a sexual term or a sexual connotation.
Yeah, I understand.
Where, you know, we can look down our noses at and agree, you know, that there are people who agree with Mitt that, you know, it's just a superior culture that causes the Israelis to have a higher gross domestic product than Palestinians, and never even look for a moment at the economic chokehold that Israel maintains over
right.
the occupied territories.
Right. Well, you know, I last time I talked to my right-wing friend who quit speaking to me, she was saying, you know, that she was trying to visualize all this money coming to her, and she said, I want to help Israel out, and I said, well, which Israel? You want to help the ones who want peace, or do you want help the ones who want war? Well, I don't know. I just want to help them.
Right, and never having enough self-awareness to realize that the United States, in the 3 years that Barack Obama's been in office, has pumped billions of dollars into Israel, just like the previous administration pumped billions of dollars into Israel, just like the previous administration pumped, you know, Democrat, Republican, we pump billions of dollars, but because of people like John Hagee, you've got folks out there thinking that Barack Obama, he hates Israel.
And you know, it so much of it is taught to people in church, and they just believe it. Look at that Baldwin brother.
Oh, Stephen.
He's so sold into that, and I think Alec told him that, you know, they're gonna drop you like a hotcake one of these days.
Well, because
sooner or later he's got to catch on, you know. But I just wanted to say that one thing that really explained a lot of things to me, though, was when I found out about the family.
Yeah.
Because I thought, where is all this stuff coming from? And they're very open with this. What in the world is that guy talking about dog fights? What in the world? I've heard him before, and he is so, he just goes on and on and on, very elaborative, you know.
Yeah. And
of course, he's not the only one.
And that kind of stuff really, really plays with the base. And
yes,
and I guess that's the bottom line. No, you talk about stuff that gets preached from the pulpit. Now, I've got a perfect example of it here. I think Isaac sent this along. It's a story about Reverend Williams Owens, okay? He's the founder of something called the Coalition of African American Pastors.
Okay.
Now, yesterday, he said, and this is the quote, Juanita, and he said it at the National Press Club. He said, the president is in the White House because of the civil rights movement, and I was a leader in that movement, and I didn't march 1 inch, 1 foot, 1 yard for a man to marry a man or a woman to marry a woman. So the president has forgotten the price that was paid. People died or they suffered or they gave their blood to have equal rights in the United States. And for the homosexual community and for the president to bow to the money as Judas did with Jesus Christ is a disgrace. This man compared Barack Obama, this man, an ordained, presumably ordained minister,
yeah.
compared Barack Obama
mm-hmm.
to Judas Iscariot.
Right. Now you see why I don't go to church anymore. I just can't handle it.
No, I can't.
I just can't take it.
I'd sit down in the pew and I'd be up and gone in after the first hymn.
Yeah, and it's so ingrained, and people think whatever they hear there, that is it, and they're not gonna change their mind. You know, they're just not. That was just something in me that I guess my raising or something within me that I just couldn't go along with the right-wing crowd. I went a lot.
Well, I think you've got entirely too well developed a sense of morality and ethics. I mean, for this guy to say that he marched for civil rights,
yeah,
but what not for civil rights for everybody.
Right. Yeah. Well, to me, if they're not supposed to have the rights as a United States citizen, then they should not have to pay taxes.
Now, there's one. But then again, the right wing doesn't want anybody to pay taxes.
Well, they want us to be burdened down with what they call extra charges. By the way, you know, yesterday I was watching Rachel Maddow. I know her name.
I know.
Anyway, you know, Rachel. And she was talking about that the medical thing had gone into force yesterday. And I was thinking, not in Florida. What about West Virginia?
Well, some of the federal stuff went into effect all over the country today, and it's a great day because of it. But
you think the federal stuff did?
Yeah, oh yeah.
Florida?
Yeah. Yeah.
Like
but
why?
That's expanded birth control access, for instance.
Yeah.
Okay, but that doesn't...
See, he's turned down a lot of the Medicaid that would help.
But this is a directive... No, the Medicaid stuff wouldn't kick in until January 1st of what, 2014 maybe? But this is specifically related to women's health care. And, but this is also an example of how the right wing reacts, the extremism that is taken for normal among them. Mike Kelly is a member of the House. He's a member of the House from Pennsylvania. He's one of those freshman teabaggers, I guess. And in regard to the expansion of birth control access that begins today, that is a great good for women, Mike Kelly of Pennsylvania said the following, Juanita. I know in your mind you can think of the times America was attacked. One is December the 7th. That is Pearl Harbor Day. Another was September 11th. That was the day of the terrorist attack. I want you to remember August the 1st, 2012, the attack on our religious freedom. That is a date that will live in infamy along with those other dates.
Oh, yeah?
Yeah. So this guy thinks that an open act of war by one nation on another, or an open act of terrorism by 19 hijackers against the military and corporate trade structure of this country is the same thing as a woman being able to have birth control. That's how twisted these people are, Juanita.
I know.
By the way, Jim sends you along. He says a sincere meow to Juanita.
Meow back.
Exactly. But don't ever think that there's something wrong because you can't figure out how these right wingers process information, if we can even say that.
Well, I think a lot of them are devious and they know what they're doing, just like that Jim Lutz.
Oh, by the way, I gave you the wrong name. I've got a little piece of paper that I write down names on here.
Mm-hmm.
No, and I read the wrong part of the paper. No, that was Harry. That was Harry.
They
called in a few minutes ago, and I hope we'll hear back.
Welcome to the horn, Harry, and call back.
Indeed. And I hope we'll hear from Peg in Kentucky too. I just love hearing from new listeners. And,
oh, yeah. You got some real good ones.
Yeah.
But you already have some real good ones, too, right?
Well, absolutely, and have had for some time. Nudge, nudge, wink, wink, hint, hint.
And I missed James being on the show. See, he was on last Friday?
Yes.
I got to look that up. You know, that's my buddy.
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely. It was an absolute delight and joy to have Guy on. We had a couple of technical glitches, but I think the magic of the moment still came through.
Yeah. Okay.
Oh,
well,
and by the way, Jude says, "Hey to Juanita, my sister."
Well, where's she been? Tell her hello back.
Around and about and up and down the earth. I think that's
and inside and out.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, and Jude pointed out that the little 6-year-old in the video that David from Maine and I ran, yeah, he had a toy gun strapped onto his hip.
Oh, gosh.
And at one point, he takes it out and points it directly at the camera. This is what his parents are teaching that poor little child.
Yeah.
To point guns at people.
Yeah. Twisted.
Yeah. And malicious and wicked and you know,
been
you use
going on for so long, Bob, you know.
Yeah, the question is a healing even possible?
Yeah.
And I don't know if it is. I mean,
I don't either. Sometimes I've been, you know, wonder if we even as a whole of a country, if we even deserve it. You know what I'm saying?
Well, you use the word, and I don't throw it around, and I know you don't throw it around, but you use the word early in our conversation, demonic, and it's hard to watch some of these monsters and not think that that is the very word to be used.
Yeah.
Okay. Well, Juanita, you have yourself a wonderful evening. It's awful good to hear from you.
Thank you. I'm glad I could get through.
I'm glad you could, too.
Yeah, I was trying to send what kind of Sanders was taken up for the Muppets.
And there's another one of those moments. Isn't it a sad day in America when puppets have to be defended?
I'm telling you. God. Yeah. And that guy was talking about that young man. I saw him being interviewed on MSNBC. He's
right.
For Obama now. You know, he's not
right. Yeah.
No longer conservative.
You know,
not in the sense of what they are.
It is a bizarre marker of our time. First they came for Tinky Winky, and I said nothing.
Yeah, I remember.
Then they came for SpongeBob, and I said nothing. Then
and
they
SpongeBob,
came for Kermit.
And SpongeBob is not. You know, sponges are male and female.
Yeah. That just means that they're Satan's little squeegees. Juanita, you have a good evening, dear.
Okay.
All right. Bye now. And thus we come to the end of another Prayer Meeting Wednesday. Be around tomorrow for Thorn in the Side Thursday. We finally got all the days of the week named. Thank you so much, everyone, for all that you do to make this what it is and what it has been. Hopefully what it will be from the very beginning. This doesn't happen on the radio because there is no way under the sun this could happen on terrestrial radio. It just couldn't. But I sure am glad that y'all make it happen here. Thank you. And a big get well soon to our dear friend Maura. I just had a note saying that she'd been in the hospital, and we sure hope you get to feeling better real quick, Maura, because we all love you dearly. Because, you know, this is a family here. It's not me, the host, and y'all, the audience. This is a family. So thanks to our all-volunteer staff, Lottie and Sparky in the chat room, our news ninjas, Gene and Susan. Thank you to our blogger, Texas Betsy. Thanks very much to John Fox. Thanks always to Ben Birch, WhiteRoseSociety.org. Thanks to the hardest-working, bravest people I know, the folks at Coal River Mountain Watch, CRMW.net, and most importantly, AcheAct.org. Go to AcheAct.org and learn how you can be a part of the end of Appalachia's agony. And always, 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 Gina, Judy, it's all for you. Rick Smith is next on The Horn.